This is the Quality News Network. Vice President Dick Cheney made an unannounced stop in Iraq as part of his trip to the Middle East this week. The vice president met with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to discuss security and political issues. He said the country remains a dangerous place. While he was at the U.S. Embassy in the heavily fortified Green Zone, a loud explosion was heard, which was a mortar round. President Bush is threatening another veto of the latest Iraq war funding bill. House Democratic leaders are considering a short-term funding for the war through the summer, followed by a reevaluation to see if progress is being made in Iraq. Defense Secretary Robert Gates told a Senate panel today that if there is progress in Iraq this fall, the U.S. could begin a troop withdrawal. American military commanders are expected to reevaluate the security situation in September. According to the latest CNN poll, 65% of Americans disapprove of the war in Iraq. 57% say they want Congress to pass a bill setting a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. forces. In the Kurdish city of Erbil today, a suicide truck bomb blast killed 14 people at the Interior Ministry. Dozens were wounded in the explosion, which is being blamed on al-Qaeda insurgents. British Prime Minister Tony Blair will make an announcement about his future tomorrow. He is expected to say when he plans to leave office. In the UK this morning, Scotland Yard arrested four more suspects tied to the 2005 train and bus bombings, which killed 52 people. In Nigeria, four American oil workers were abducted by rebels today from a construction barge. Yesterday, militants blew up three major oil pipelines. Pope Benedict arrived in Brazil for his first trip to Latin America as pontiff. He will spend about 5 days there, where he's expected to speak about poverty and crime. The Pope also denounced the politicians in Mexico City who recently voted to legalize abortion in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. President Bush visited the southwest Kansas region hit hard by a tornado last weekend. At least 11 people were killed by the storm, which virtually flattened Greenburg, a farming town of about 1,600 people. A massive wildfire is burning in Los Angeles near the Griffith Observatory. At least 300 residents were evacuated last night. However, some were allowed to return to their homes today. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
3 weeks before the start of hurricane season, the first named Atlantic storm of 2007, Andrea, has formed off the southeastern U.S. coast. Scientists from Singapore who studied gamblers concluded that when people are tired, they are more likely to make riskier options with the possibility of a high payoff. The research will be published in the journal Sleep. The New York Times reports pharmaceutical companies Amgen and Johnson & Johnson are paying U.S. physicians millions of dollars to prescribe their anemia medications. Other doctors are warning the anemia drugs may substantially increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. The Federal Reserve has decided to keep short-term interest rates unchanged at 5.25%. The vote was unanimous, and it was the seventh time the Fed met and decided to hold rates steady. A new survey finds London is the most expensive place to live in the world. An auction of Grateful Dead memorabilia, which once belonged to the band's road manager, brought in $1.1 million. An electric guitar once used by Jerry Garcia sold for $312,000, according to the auction house. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.47 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones had another record close, up 54 points at 13,362, while the Nasdaq was up 5. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, already. This is going to be one of those sort of serialized editions of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We're going to sort of pick up where we left off last night, but of course, it's not going to be all politicals, fun and games, because after all, you know what day it is.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on Head On. And I'm Brother Bob, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down to the altar, place your hands upon your computer speakers, and feel the power of reason and common sense flowing through you, brethren and sistren. Amen and amen.
Oh, my God.
We're on okay, we're gonna back away from the religious tomfoolery for a little bit. After all, we got plenty of time. The old German aircraft gunner who shot at American planes and British planes and Allied planes during World War II, he's on his way to Latin America, and God knows there's starvation and there's disease and there's crime and inequity and at least in Colombia. The rest of the continent seems to be working toward fairness, whether it's Luis da Silva in Brazil or Bolivia or Chile. Even Argentina appears to be trying to get its act together. Regardless of all the problems that exist, you know, I mean, if you're a union organizer in Colombia, for instance, you don't have a lot of life expectancy to you, because the American corporation subsidiary thugs will have your ass dead in no time flat. So what is Benny the old aircraft anti-aircraft gunner worried about? That's right, he's worried that women in Mexico City actually may be able to make their own health care decisions now. What a dirty old hypocrite he is. But that's not where we're going to start. No, like I said, it's sort of serialized from last night. Because you'll recall that yesterday... I keep saying night. It's not even night here. Yesterday's program, you will recall, we had a clip from the oxymoron, the junkie, Flush Flemball, he who is becoming less relevant by the day. In which he said, "My friends, no one is complaining about Barack the Magic Negro here. It's simply the most popular parody we have ever run." Right? Remember? "No one's complaining about it here. No one's telling me that it's racist or bigoted." And I put forward the argument that the reason no one is saying that it's racist or bigoted is because Russia's army of little weirdo ditto heads are racist and bigoted, and they wouldn't therefore say anything about it because they get a giggle out of that kind of the evil juvenile crap, such as that parody song, that little bit of radio minstrelsy. And I also posited that, you know, where the Republican Party is where all the hateful old filthy old nasty ass racists went when they found that they were no longer welcome in the Democratic Party. And lo and behold, how about this? Turns out that even as I was speaking, or maybe just a mere few hours before I said that, a nasty-ass Republican, racist, filthy, the verminous, dead from the neck up conservative named Ted Poe from Texas's 2nd District. Ted Poe would be the fault of voters from Humble and Beaumont, Texas. What's that, Agnes? No, he's not our favorite Teletubby, dear. Now, Ted Poe from Texas gave life to what I said about the right wing, well, the Republican Party, the Reptilican Party, because Ted Poe got up on the floor of the House to try to argue as to why we need to send more money for George Bush's war against the people of Iraq. My God, what did this guy do in a former life? I mean, they're stupid, and then they're stupid. And this guy is a real, you know, the window licker. So we'll go to the audio, and I'll let you see what I mean. Agnes, be ready on the trigger. We may have to pause as we go. Fire it up.
Mr. Speaker, does anybody realize there's a war going out there in the desert sands of Iraq and the rough mountains of Afghanistan? Apparently not, or Congress would be taking care of our troops. Mr. Speaker,
pause.
The troops...
See, we haven't even gotten to the good part, and this guy's already made a fool of himself. Congress did take care of the troops, you goon. Why can't you... You know, I don't know. I've got a new proposal. I think before a member of Congress stands up to speak, a member of Congress should have to take... How about the same oath that a witness takes in a criminal trial to tell the damn truth? Then, when Ted Poe stands up and says, Congress ain't funding the troops, you could charge him with perjury and run his ass out on a rail. Get the tar, get the feathers, and get him the hell out of here. Because Congress did fund the troops. Congress funded the war. I'll bet you, I didn't bother to look it up, but I will bet you dimes to donuts, dollars to donuts. I mean, after all, we got to deal with inflation here, don't we? Dollars, dadgummit, dollars to donuts, I'll bet you, that Ted Poe voted against funding the troops. But go on.
This will be out of funds to carry the fight to the enemy by the end of June. So where's the money? Spending money is what Congress does.
Wait, stop. Oh. Spending money is what Congress does. You dirty little Republican. I thought it's what you wanted Congress not to do. We're fiscal conservatives, and spending has gotten entirely out of hand, even though the 12 years that we was in control, we were the worst of the lot. Oh, Lord. But like I said, it keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better.
Hasn't this body provided the funds for our troops and equipment and for more personnel? This is an emergency. Delay will put our troops at risk.
Wait. This is an emergency? Somebody want to show me the declaration of emergency, a declaration of a national emergency? Geez, when you've got military emergencies, doesn't Congress usually, call me crazy, declare war? You want to declare war, Congressman Ted? Jeez, you got the same last name as Edgar Allan, and he was drunk most of the time, and I'm still a hell of a lot smarter than you.
Authorize the funds now, send equipment now, and if needed, send more troops. The American people expect our military to do their duty.
Hey, Ted, wait. Send more troops. Got any kids, Ted? You old freak. You got any kids? Are they in the dirty, stinking, sandy little meat grinder that is Iraq? It is May the 9th, 2007, Ted. And on May the 9th, 2007, in the month of May, we already have 29 Americans coming home in boxes. And you want more troops. get out there and get some of your Republican buddies to sign their sons and daughters up to go, and quit relying on the kids from the barrio and the kids from the country and the kids from the inner city. Get some of your own lily-white people to go, Ted. You goober.
Well, the American people expect us to do ours as well.
They already
Congress
have.
Needs to quit talking about supporting the troops and put money where our mouths seem to be.
Now, wait. Nathan. Okay, hit the little backward arrow button there, dear. Yep, that one. Just a second. Yeah, that's good. Do you hear what the Republican meme is? They're acting like that there's never been a bill passed to provide emergency funding for the troops. We passed one. Democrats passed a bill that gave money, more money, and even more money than George Bush wanted for his filthy little war against the poor, benighted people of the nation of Iraq. They did. But the Republicans, you know, they've got the media in their pocket. They've got the New York Times in their pocket, the Washington Post in their pocket. They've got CBS, NBC, ABC in their pocket, because this war is good doggone business for big media. Gives them something to do instead of actually having to do journalism. And so, knowing that, they're gonna holler that nobody has tried to fund the troops. Ted, you gotta just deal with it, buddy. A bill was sent up. Your president, that freak in the White House that you love so dearly, that man in the White House that you love better than America itself, that man that you have defended while he attacked the Constitution left, right, up, down, and sideways from Monday to Sunday, that man defunded your precious little war. Democrats didn't. Deal with it, freak. But wait. Now, it's been bad enough so far, right? I mean, this is ugly. This is just nasty. Bunch of daggum lying. Filthy lying. Obvious lying. Shameless lying. He's not even trying to cover up the fact that he's lying. It's about to get worse. Now, in support of all of this business of pumping more money into an unwinnable war that happens to be a civil war now, well, you didn't think Ted Poe could go any lower. But, you know what? You thought wrong, because he can. Hit it, Agnes!
Nathan Bedford Forrest, successful Confederate general, said it best about winning and victory and the means to do so. He said, get there firstest with the mostest.
What?
That's right. Ted Poe has just cited General Nathan Bedford Forrest with a quote that one of the primary scholars on Nathan Bedford Forrest, Bruce Caton, said he never said. Nathan Bedford Forrest was a member of the elite, and he didn't say things like mostest and fastest, fustest with the mostest.
He said, get there firstest with the mostest.
No, he didn't. Actually, he said, get there fastest with the most. But this idiot doesn't know better. Because, after all, he is a member of the Republican Party. And they're just not very smart when it comes to their rank and file, and that's what he is. He's just he's a little upper-level shock troop in the war against the Constitution and the war against all that we hold dear in these United States. Ted Poe is anti-troop. Ted Poe is anti-you and me. And Ted Poe, in defense of his position, cited General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Okay, kids, let's go over to the History Corner and study a minute on who Ted Poe, or on who General Nathan Bedford Forrest was. What did he call him? Very successful Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. How successful was he, Ted? He was on the losing side, buddy.
I was born in Alabama, and I did. You know, I'm not one of those that runs around with that front tag on the front bumper that says "Forget Hell, South will rise again." No, we lost. The South lost. My forebears who rode with Colonel M. Bowden's Confederate cavalry, we lost. And we lost because we deserved to lose, because our side was fighting for something dirty and sleazy. To wit, the right to own other human beings. I can see that, even as a native-born Alabamian, Ted, I can see that, but you can't, you ignoramus. Honest to God, does somebody have to come out when it's raining and make you close your mouth, Ted Poe? Otherwise, you'd damn well drown.
That's right.
So, you called him very successful Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest, and thereby proved yourself to be an idiot. But wait, what did you not call him, Ted? Ted Poe, what did you not call Nathan Bedford Forrest? I'll tell you what you didn't call him, Ted. You didn't call him First Imperial Wizard of the KKK, Nathan Bedford Forrest. Nathan Bedford Forrest, after all, founded the Ku Klux Klan as a means of intimidating recently emancipated African-American slaves and making sure that they didn't get too the word they used to use down there in the beautiful old South, making sure the recently emancipated slaves didn't get too uppity, so they'd hang a few or burn a few or just shoot a few. And Nathan Bedford Forrest, that successful Confederate general, was the man who founded it all. So there you have it, America. World. There you have it. A Republican member of the House of Representatives yesterday attempted to quote the Imperial Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan as justification for continuing George Bush's disgusting little war against the people of Iraq. You know, what do you say to that? But just, wow. That takes some stones. It also proves what I said. If you're a member of the GOP, you are a member of a racist organization no less than the Klan. Could it be any clearer? Nathan Bedford Forrest. Gee, money Christmas. Let's go to the phones. Andrew calls from upstate New York. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain. Just waiting for the sun to go down up here and so I can go mow the grass, but, you know.
A little toasty out here. So much for spring.
Yes. Well, it's going to get cool again on the weekend, but 83 for me is like, you know, the first couple of days I got to get used to it, you know.
Yeah, that's no relief in sight stuff.
Yes. Who is this guy, Poe? What? Who?
See, it does it to you, too.
Who? Quoting what? Confederate General? Amazing. I mean, it's just like you said, the South lost, and because they were fighting, for the wrong reason, you know, that they were waging war for the wrong reason. Same thing that we're doing now in Iraq, and you made it so eloquently when you pointed out that fact. What happened here in the United States is that there's a bunch of racists waging war on the Middle East, Iraq in particular.
Yeah.
It's because they want to steal their oil. They don't want their labor. They just want their resources.
Oh, but please, Andrew, bear in mind, the labor's part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because One of the first things that the Coalition Provisional Authority did, as I mentioned a couple of nights ago, was to crack down on any concept of organized labor in Iraq.
Oh, yeah. Same way they're doing here.
I mean, it's not a far cry, at least where Iraq is concerned, from chopping cotton to pumping oil.
But, you know, they're going to lose, you know, because it's the wrong cause. I mean, it's the total wrong cause. I remember I called you probably a month or so ago, and I was saying that, you know, they could have went in there, right, took out Saddam, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tried to do right by him, and instead of taking, 75% of the profits, or whatever extravagant amount of profits they wanted to take, could have took 30%. If they made it equitable to the Iraqi people, you know, and did right by them, you know.
Sodom, but that was never in the cards.
Evil guy. Huh?
That was never in the cards, Andrew.
No, it wasn't, because of sheer greed. Sheer utter greed.
I mean, remember, I can't remember his name now. Got named to run the general somebody or whatever, got named to run the Coalition Provisional Authorities, got in there and said, you know, we're going to have some elections right away.
The Viceroy, Paul Bremer. Wasn't that Paul Bremer?
No, it wasn't Bremer, because Bremer wound... It was somebody before that. I can't remember his name now. But they said, this election talk's got to go. Don't unpack. We'll find somebody else to do this.
Yeah, well, old Dick Cheney's over there now trying to keep postponing the boys' vacation, the Iraqi Parliament's vacation, until they can sign those oil agreements. He's got his petticoats all in a cluster.
Oh, that's just a mental image I didn't need.
Bunker boy. But it's just, Cheney, I can't, oh, gosh. And then he'll go, you know, and he'll report to whoever. But I am so sick of Bush. It's like, it should be so easy to try, convict, and put these guys away. It's all there.
It is. It's a no-brainer, Andrew.
The entire globe sees it. The entire world sees this, and they see the hypocrisy, they see the greed, they see the maliciousness, they see how they're treating the American people, and how they're breaking down the Constitution. They've urinated all over it. And, you know, and they're talking about they're promoting democracy. It's just that we're the biggest hypocrites on the planet. They should just have a big H. You know, right over to the United States.
Yeah, we've all read the Scarlet Letter. I think we put a Scarlet Letter H on all of George and Dick's and Condi's and everybody's little suits. You know, big H for hypocrite.
It's embarrassing. It's sad. It's, you know, the waste of life.
I mean, we know now, I hit this a little bit last night, we know that Condoleezza Rice was sitting on the board of directors of Chevron at the time that they were funneling illegal kickbacks to Saddam in the oil for food program, and she had the nerve to stand up and complain about it?
I can't go on Condi right now. That'll raise my BP too much.
Okay, sorry.
Condi. Oh. Yeah, I mean, she's something that, you know, like my whole family used to say, oh, Condoleezza Rice, she's moving up, she's NSA director, blah, 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 Condoleezza Rice.
Did you have to say moving up?
Yeah, until they found out what she was really about, and they were like, oh, my God. And it was just like a couple of years ago they found out what she really was all about. And then I was like, I told you.
Well, see, that's the thing. Clarence Thomas are two peas out of the same pod, because they're climbing that ladder.
Yeah, and I just like them more than anything. I think I even hate Condoleezza Rice more than I hate Cheney. That's hard to do, but I do, because it wasn't like she was born with a silver spoon in her mouth.
No. No, what? Oh. They were very... Didn't they go to great pains to explain that her grandparents were sharecroppers in Alabama, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. See, like, if you can grow up, you can be a model citizen like her and make lots of money. And, you know, you can be like Condi. Yeah, right. Yeah, I want to be like Condi. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, Andrew, I think the one thing I don't get about these people, whether it's Condi or Pearl or any of these, they've seen, everything they've touched has gone to death. It's failed. They are absolute abject failures. At what point in time do you look up and go, yeah, well, you know, I gave it my best shot. You know, I'm going to quit and go play piano now.
I don't think they could do that, because, you know, it's like this is what they're here for. I think they crawl out of their hells and hole, and I mean their holes in hell, to come here and wreak havoc. And this is their mission. That's what they're all about, man. That's what they're about. They're about creating havoc.
They're just breaking
making
stuff.
Making people poorer than they have to be. And, you know, they're making all this money when they don't even need it, because they already have it. And this is what they're supposed to do. I mean, they don't want to leave control and power. They love power. They like making people miserable. Their bottom line. That's their MO. That's the modus operandi. Because they're miserable, they everything to begin with.
And yet nobody, and it seems like, with the exception of what we're doing here, what they're doing at Nova M, a few other limited instances, nobody's calling them on it. I mean, whether it was Rohrabacher a week ago last Tuesday wishing another 9/11 on people who disagreed with him about torture and kidnapping, or whether it's this Poe freak standing up and quoting the Imperial Wizard of the Klan.
It's, you know, what it is. That's what they do. And that's what they always want to do. They will never be able to retire. They'll always be plotting in one way or the other.
I mean,
even if they do retire, they will be still having.
But Andrew, can Katie Couric or Brian Williams or Lou Dobbs or somebody find 15 seconds to mention this on the air? I mean, how hard would that be? What other stuff is more important? Can we sacrifice 45 seconds of Paris Hilton coverage to point out that a congressman from Texas is quoting the Grand Wizard of the Klan on the floor of the House? It just makes me want to scream.
I know, but they can't. You know why? Because that's where their paycheck. Those guys signed their paycheck. They signed their paycheck, you know. And they know that it's messed up and it's wrong and everything we're doing is wrong. But they're not going to, like, sacrifice themselves. They're going to be like, oh, why should I give up my $10 million a year salary or whatever I'm making? You know? It's just going to go on. That's the way they think.
I mean, I'd be happy if Olbermann hit this one.
Yeah, they think micro. They don't think macro. They don't think, you know, like, if it keeps going the way it's going, the rich are going to get eaten. That's the bottom line. I mean, I heard Mike Malloy say one night, he said the rich will get eaten. We will have to, they will... That's just where it's headed, you know.
Yeah. By the way, it was Jay Garner.
Oh, Jay Garner.
Jay Garner was before Paul Bremer. I got corrected. That's the length of time it took me to get corrected on that.
All right.
Yeah, Jay Garner got there. They said, "Don't unpack if you're talking about elections."
Oh goodness. Well, that's, you know, I just wanted to call up and make a comment on that Confederate general thing, and that was about it. So.
Yeah, Andrew, I wish I was making it up.
Well, I know you're not making it up. You know, I live up in the north, but I see it too, so it's not a surprise.
No, it's not. It's just what it is proof, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all it does. It's just another confirmation.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew. I hope it gets down to where you can cut the grass tonight.
All righty.
All right, you take care.
Yep, take it easy.
All right, bye now. Don't you wish it was fake? Don't you wish this was just like Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live or something, and it didn't really happen in America, that a Republican congressman from Beaumont, Texas really didn't quote the Imperial Wizard, the first Imperial Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan on the House of the Floor? And you know, it's not like he quoted him and said, and that's what's wrong with America. No, he quoted him affirmatively. Ouch! Let's go to Susan in Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm a trifle PO'd.
I do that to you. I don't mean to. Well, I kind
of. No,
do.
You didn't do it to me.
Oh, good.
I have been calling campaign organizations all day from Clinton's campaign to Obama's, you name it. Edward, all of them I could reach anyway. It seems that Senator Mike Gravel is going to be excluded from the New Hampshire debate.
Is he on the ballot there?
Yes.
Well, we can't have any cranky old uncles.
Well,
are they excluding dentists too?
Not to my knowledge. I've got a post up on Head On as well as Centab, and it says, I think the headline, the title says it all. What are the Democrats afraid of?
They're afraid of being made uncomfortable. Okay,
yeah,
that's
this, you know, this guy can't possibly win the nomination, and everybody knows it. But what he can do is ask really, really uncomfortable questions.
And you want to know the measure, Susan, of the integrity of the rest of the field? Depending on who made that decision that Mike Gravel doesn't get to go to the New Hampshire debate.
It was CNN and the sponsors, and not one of these candidates is protesting it, to my knowledge.
Well, see, like I said, there's your measure. There's your yardstick.
And that tells me a whole lot about who's worth voting for, and frankly, not a one of them is measuring up, and I told them so.
Well, I'd like to hope something good will come out of the Kucinich campaign. I'd like to, you know, John Edwards did a good job of standing up and saying, look, you know, I'm not going to participate with Fox. If freedom of speech means anything.
Yeah, well, John Edwards should maybe stand up and say, guys, this is supposed to be a democracy. You know, we expect the Republicans to be scuzzy monsters. But
yeah.
when our own people start acting like Republicans, come on now.
Well, see, and that's the thing. I don't know where the ten little idiots showed up last week. Remember, out at the Reagan Library, there should have been 11 little idiots. Because there's a real goober named Cox. Who calls himself a presidential candidate as well. Former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party or whatever. Hell, they arrested him for showing up at the Reagan Library. So maybe, you know, maybe it's another case of the Democrats taking their cues from the Republicans. I don't know. But, you know, frankly, every debate there is, I think Mike Gravel should be there to look at Barack and say, who do you want to nuke today, Barack?
Yeah, and he
should, hey, Hillary, who you want to kill, honey?
Yeah, and he should be there to tell Joe Biden he's arrogant, because let's face it, Biden is arrogant. Any politician willing to say, I want to be president of the United States, has to be arrogant.
Sure. And frankly, I believe
we need a gadfly like him.
Sure we do.
Anybody who has the stones to risk a treason charge.
Yeah, guts
is somebody I want around. Now, he doesn't have a chance at the presidency, but I would be looking at this guy and saying, when I'm elected, I want this guy in my government. And instead, they're just marginalizing him. They're dumping him.
Well, to be honest, he's marginalized from the get-go by virtue of the nature of the process and his ability to have enough cash to run the campaign.
Right, but by not objecting.
Oh, I know. Yes, silence.
The other candidates have become complicit.
Silence is acceptance. We went over this a little bit last night. Sure.
And by not objecting, they are saying, sure, it's fine, go ahead.
He doesn't need to be here. He's crazy.
Crazy like a fox.
Well, you know, if he's
crazy's like him.
If he's crazy, I'm crazy too.
Yeah,
because
I think
it's vital that we ask in this election cycle whether or not we're going to continue this policy of we can kill anybody we want to.
Yeah. Who appointed us the World Cup?
Well, who appointed us the world's enforcer of democracy?
Yeah, and who said that we had to determine that all the world had to be a democracy? I got news for you. There's countries on this planet who are not now and never have been democracies, and they get along just fine.
Sure. And then there's the world's biggest democracy, India.
Yeah.
Who has never signed on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement and to whom George Bush is now sending nuclear technology. What's the difference between India and, say, Iran? Well, here's the biggest difference, Susan. India already has the nukes.
Yeah. And on top of that, India, oh, man. India doesn't even make an attempt at shall we say, assimilation.
Well, they've got problems of their own. The peaceful little Jainists over there, you know, the won't hurt a fly Jainists. Now, you're familiar with Jainism, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, won't swat a gnat. Well, uh-huh. they've taken to burning out their neighbors if they happen to have a restaurant within a mile of a Jain temple that serves meat. You know, it's religion, among other things. Hey, it's Wednesday. We can say this. Religion is spiraling us out of control and into a real mess.
Religion is turning this entire planet into an insane asylum.
Well, I was going to say abattoir.
Well, I was going to say an insane asylum where the inmates taken over,
yeah.
Gotten hold of the scalpels.
Well, you know what? I think what you did, Susan, is laudable, and I hope others will follow in your footsteps. Have you linked up means of contacting the other campaigns and asking them why they won't stand up for free speech?
No, I didn't have a chance to do that. I basically put the post up on the fly, but I'm going to go back and re-edit it and add that because I think I think the contact information for the various.
And frankly, you know Barack Obama wants him off the stage. You know Hillary Clinton wants him off the stage. You know John Edwards wants him off the stage because John's used that same, you know, all options are on the table stuff.
And there's a perfectly pragmatic reason to keep him on, because the minute they toss him off, the Republican freepers, especially the echo chamber, start saying, what are they afraid of?
Yeah. We lower ourselves to the level of the Republicans when we behave like them. And like I said, they've already seen fit. And you know, this Cox critter on the Republican side, you know, he pulled 5-8%, 5-10%, I forget what, mm-hmm. in a straw poll in Iowa and another straw poll in South Carolina. And he's a real freak, and he needed to be up there with the other freaks. Let him debate. You know,
yeah.
A long, long time ago, the greatest, I think he's acknowledged as the greatest ever Native American jurist, a man named Learned Hand, who sat on the federal court in or around Chicago, I believe. He lectured in a series of letters. He lectured Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., who was, you know, a coke freak, lectured him on free speech, and he said the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech.
Oh yeah.
And that's where I've always come down. The remedy to bad speech is more speech. You don't afford bad speech legitimacy by suppressing it.
You encourage further speech.
Yeah, you encourage further speech to point out why the bad speech is bad.
Yeah.
If it's wrong for Mike Gravel to ask who it is that the other Democrats want to nuke, then let the other candidates explain why that's bad speech. Don't just shut him up.
And don't just shut him up because he has the guts to say, you people scare me.
Yeah.
Frankly, they scare me too.
With good reason. Susan, I thank you for putting that up there, and I thank you for the fight.
Well, no problem at all.
All righty. You have a good afternoon.
Well, I shall go down and get my magic cracker and give Sister Agnes a kiss.
I sure will.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's the kiss of fellowship, absolutely.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And we roll onward to our good buddy Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm having fun.
Hey, man, did you get that alternate article I sent you today?
I got it. I haven't read it yet because I didn't get in until just a little bit ago.
Listen, man, I highly recommend this article to everyone. You know, I mean, you know, Peter, if you're listening, if I was smart enough, I could put the link up on the page. But, you know, that ain't me, brother. Alternet, there's an article, Hard to Deny, Iraq is All About the Oil.
Yeah, I've got it here now.
Listen, man, it is, it lays the whole thing out. It lays it all out. And, I think that there is an argument. I'd like to read you a, just a little bit of this thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, this is towards the end. And this story is all about, you know, the attempt to take over the Iraqi oil. You know, the, what is it they want them to pass? The oil law?
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I forget what the official name of it is. But, you know, I mean, this whole thing is multinational oil corporations are going to take over Iraq oil. That's just all they're, that's what they want them to pass. And, you know, why these people are going on vacation, and 2 months vacation and stuff like that, is because they want to avoid dealing with this. And later on, I mean, it lays out the whole history of how all this went down.
Yeah.
And, towards the end of the thing, it says, perhaps most formidable of all, and this is about the opposition to them passing this law, is the Federation of Oil Workers, with 26,000 members and allies throughout organized labor. The oil workers overturned contracts in 2003 and 2004 that would have placed substantial oil facilities under multinational corporate control. And they initiated a vigorous campaign against the U.S.-sponsored oil program as early as June 2005, calling a conference to oppose privatization, attended by workers, academics, and international civil society groups. The president of this union, when the bill was made public, union president, and I can't say the guy's name, denounced it before yet another protest meeting, stating, "History will not forgive those who have played reckless with our wealth. We consider the new law unbalanced and incoherent with the hopes of those who work in the oil industry. It has been drafted in a great rush and harsh circumstances." So, listen, and I really recommend everybody go read this article. It's like it's 11 pages, but it's very, very interesting. But see, this to me puts forth an argument where we can end the war, because it looks to me by reading this we've done what they said. Well, I don't know which reason it was when it came up to we want to establish a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that reading this article shows that has taken foothold, and it's time for us to get out and let it develop.
Yeah.
These people are uniting against the United States and these multinational corporations, which are, you know, in other countries also.
Exxon.
From taking over the wealth of their country.
Right.
That's exactly, and, you know, this article describes the agreement that they want them to sign. Is a production sharing contract.
Yeah.
In other words, we control 80% of the 70-80% of the profits for the next 25 years.
Yeah, and we'll let a trickle flow down to you. My God, that's a bigger ripoff than the Oil for Food program was.
Oh, I would say so.
And see, that's the kind of, that's the kind of deal that the oil companies love to strike in little third world countries that have, for instance, a ham-fisted dictator running it. Say what you will about Hugo Chavez, but the reason he earned the wrath of the Bush administration was because he busted exactly the same kind of agreement. He said, "You're taking our oil and we're getting 20%?
Well, that's exactly right.
It's their oil.
That's exactly right. But,
And if I was an Iraqi, I'd be madder than an old wet hen.
Yes. But,
I mean, you're taking...
You find it...
yeah, I do.
Amazing, but, I mean, my thing, the 26,000 members of this union workers' union...
Yeah, the oil workers?
Yeah. I mean, that in Iraq... They got a little advantage over us. I bet they all got AK-47.
Yeah, well, you know, that's...
Yeah.
But the other thing is, please bear in mind that there has been, and it's been very, very lowly reported, there has been a steady attack on organized labor in Iraq.
Yes, they have, but...
And these guys are next. And because part and parcel of this oil law... If everything that I've read is even remotely close to accurate, it will take the life out of that 26,000 member union.
Oh, I don't doubt that a bit. But you know, I mean, it's.
I mean, hell, we may even send over Elaine Chao to be the Iraqi labor secretary.
Oh, we might try all those things. But what I'm telling you is, there's a movement building there. That isn't all about religion. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do.
You know, I mean, these people realize what's happening, and they're fighting for their country. And, you know, if, you know, George Bush says that we want to, you know, how's he say it, start a democracy there?
Best place to start.
I think we already did. Now it's time for us to come home and let them develop, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, we've created,
and there's nothing like a labor union to get democracy started.
Exactly, and what, you know, we are their Boston Tea Party.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, and they'll chuck and they're willing to chuck the oil overboard, and this ain't tea. No, for instance, about Dick Cheney's little sneak in the middle of the night visit to Iraq, right?
Oh yeah.
Did you hear about it? It was kind of
hard. Well, there was explosions at the Green Zone too, weren't there?
That was a 21 IED salute.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm being a smartass. But what's more interesting is this photograph I'm looking at, Wayne, of just oodles of people all holding the same sign, you know, like out of a print shop. And it says, the signs say in Arabic, "We refuse the visit of the messenger of American terrorism, Dick Cheney." Boy, I tell you what, that sure sounds like they love us, doesn't it?
Oh, I'd say so. Were they holding flowers?
No.
No.
No, they were holding signs that say, "We hate Dick Cheney."
Well.
They want us out.
Yes, they want us out. I'm telling you, please. Well. Peter, find that article.
I've already posted it in the. I've already posted the link in the chat room.
You already did?
Yeah.
Okay. You're all right, Bob.
Well, hey,
I'll
you know.
Tell you, it's an excellent article. It lays it all out. And, you know, it's what, well, we've all known from the beginning. It's all about the money.
I know, and I love how the right-wingers, Wayne, like to say, well, if it's all about the oil, how come I'm paying $3 a gallon for gas? Because it's all about the oil.
Plan, you dummy.
Yeah.
That's why.
Because you're supposed to pay $3 a gallon, you chump.
Exactly. And you think that's bad, wait till next year. You know.
Yeah, the party isn't even heating up yet.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, man, they don't mess around anymore. You know, it used to be, gas went up 2 cents, you know.
No, hell no.
A dime at a whack.
Yeah.
You know, why mess around?
and do you remember... when we so successfully whipped the snot out of poor little defenseless Iraq back in March 2003, it's part of what led Dim Sun to get on the aircraft carrier with his padded crotch flight suit and declare mission accomplished. Remember how we just sort of roared through him like through a goose?
Yep.
And you remember how the Department of Antiquities that had 5,000-year-old examples of the very first writing on planet Earth on dried clay tablets. Remember how that was getting looted and stuff was just these clay tablets, the most precious.
But the oil fields were protected.
And we said, screw the Antiquities Department, get thee to the oil ministry.
That's exactly right.
Because we had to control the paperwork.
Well, read this article. It's very, very interesting. It's very interesting, and it lays it all out. So,
well, I will. I will.
And everyone.
Yeah, because, you know, working folks are working folks. Whether they're Iraqi working folks or American working folks are working folks. And these people are trying to keep themselves from being ripped off, and they are trying to recreate the Bush administration in Iraq.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, by signing this agreement, all those billions of dollars that the oil companies are going to make, they're not going to reinvest in Iraq. You know, it'll remain a desert, you know, a wasteland.
Yeah.
While they try to pump it dry.
When's the last time you saw a coal company reinvest in West Virginia, Wayne?
Yeah, exactly. So
they don't do that. They make ghost towns.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, it's dry enough in Iraq.
We can show you a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, it's dry enough in Iraq, we could probably even import the tumbleweeds.
There you go. We could start making Westerns again.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah.
There you go.
That didn't qualify as singing, did it?
Huh?
That didn't qualify as singing, did it?
I know that was the good, bad, and the ugly, though.
Yeah, okay, good.
You know, so.
Well, not that far off.
You communicated.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Thanks, Wayne.
Okay, pal.
Have a good one. It is a long article, and it is worth your time. If you go to Alternet, you can find it there. And it lays it out. It's by Michael Schwartz. It's from TomDispatch.com. Hard to deny, Iraq is all about the oil. Do you ever hear that? The little wing nuts. Well, why ain't the oil gas cheap? Oh, you dumbasses. Oh, where's the this way to the egress sign when I need one? Charge them a quarter and they find themselves right outside the circus and have to buy their way back in again. Come on in, conservatives. This way to the egress. This way, this way. See the egress.
Why is the oil not cheap?
Fools. But it is prayer meeting edition, and when we come back after the news, Lou Dobbs is getting into prayer meeting edition. Who'd have thunk it? Lou's done found him a Bible, and his Bible's given him a reason to hate brown people. I'll be darned. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366 on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Either way's fine. I'm Bob Kincaid.
But everything is spinning. And if I use a gun, I'm sure to go to prison. I'm stubborn as a mule. And nobody breaks my rules. But nothing comes my way. Pair of shoulders. I got a love you can't imagine. Yeah, and what I got, I double. I swear I'm keeping out of trouble. I'm looking for one new value. I'm looking for one new value, but nothing comes my way.
This is the Quality News Network.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates told a Senate panel today that if there is progress in Iraq this fall, the U.S. could begin a troop withdrawal. American military commanders are expected to reevaluate the security situation in Iraq in September. According to the latest CNN poll released yesterday, 65% of Americans disapprove of the war in Iraq. 57% say they want Congress to pass a bill setting a timetable for withdrawal. Vice President Dick Cheney made an unannounced stop in Iraq as part of his trip to the Middle East this week. He said the country remains a dangerous place. While he was at the U.S. Embassy in the heavily fortified Green Zone, a mortar round exploded. No casualties have been reported, and Cheney's visit was not disrupted. A suicide truck blast, however, killed 14 people at the Iraqi Interior Ministry. 87 people were wounded, including government officials. The explosion is being blamed on Al-Qaeda insurgents. The White House is threatening to veto the newest Iraq war funding bill. House Democratic leaders are proposing to fund the war through the summer, followed by a reevaluation to see if progress is being made in Iraq. In the UK this morning, Scotland Yard arrested four more suspects tied to the 2005 train and bus bombings, which killed 52 people. British Prime Minister Tony Blair will make an announcement about his future tomorrow. He'll specify a date when he plans to leave office. Blair has been in that office for a decade. President Bush visited the southwest Kansas region hit hard by a tornado last weekend. At least 11 people were killed by the storm, which virtually flattened Greensburg, a farming town of about 1,600 people. In Nigeria, four American oil workers were abducted by rebels today from a construction barge at the Niger Delta. Yesterday, militants blew up three major oil pipelines. And the district attorney in Riverside County, California, will seek the death penalty for the man accused of setting a massive wildfire east of Los Angeles that killed five U.S. Forest Service firefighters last fall. And more than 200 firefighters are working to contain a wildfire that's burning in Los Angeles right now. At least 300 residents were evacuated last night. Some were allowed to return today. More than 800 acres have burned. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
This is Beyonce. For a performer, a smile is an instant reward. And once you've seen the smiles on the faces of children at Shriners Hospitals, you'll know why the Shriners have been providing their world-renowned medical care to kids for over 80 years at absolutely no charge. At Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized services and treatments for kids with orthopedic, burn, or spinal cord problems. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Archaeologists in Greece report a rare find, a piece of fabric that survived intact for 2,700 years. The brittle yellow material was found inside a copper burial urn. The oxides from the decomposing copper killed off destructive microbes, allowing the woven cloth to survive. 3 weeks before the start of hurricane season, the first named Atlantic storm of 2007, Andrea, has formed off the southeastern U.S. coast. And Chinese authorities say they're tightening up controls on their food industry in the wake of the U.S. pet poisonings caused by food imported from their country. Manufacturers added a sometimes toxic illegal chemical to pet food to raise the protein levels in what has been a common practice in China. And the New York Times reports pharmaceutical companies Amgen and Johnson & Johnson are paying U.S. physicians millions of dollars to prescribe their anemia medications. Other doctors are warning the anemia drugs may substantially increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. And the Federal Reserve has decided to keep short-term interest rates unchanged at 5.25%. The vote by the Policymaking Open Market Committee was 10-0. It's the 7th time the Fed has made the same decision. And the Dow at this hour is closed. Another record high, 13,362, closed up 54 points. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes after the hour. I'm a multitasker. Sometimes I have to be typing in the chat room at the same time that Agnes is pointing the fickle finger of fate at me. You're on! You're on, dummy! You're on!
Now, Brother Bob, Agnes does not do that to you.
Sister Agnes, you do, you do.
I do not.
Do. Infinity plus one.
Put your hands together and go towards the light, Bob.
I can't help it. It's so lovely. Now, we were talking in the chat room a little bit about my stress test today. I glow in the dark right now.
Very cute.
I've got cobalt thorium G or thallium Heinz 57 or something flowing through my veins. A sweet little girl who injected it into me said, "You know, by the way, you can't get anywhere near an airport for the next 24 hours. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "They'll lock you up and everybody on the plane. You're radioactive, dude." I went, "Oh, okay." But it went very well, you know, no chest pains or anything like that. So what we're probably going to find out is that my gastroesophageal reflux disorder, my GERD, old Aunt GERD, has reappeared. But I'm trying to get at the foot of the cross, you know, get out, walk, move around a little bit, put in a couple of miles a day, get the blood pumping, the circulation going like we want it to. Lose a little bit of weight so I can stop being borderline diabetic. Oh, that just pissed me off. Oh, no. No, no. Yeah. Drink a lot of water, fruit juices, that kind of stuff. Because I got to tell you, I tried to drink diet soda. I bought a couple of 12-packs of the stuff. And it just, the mouthfeel of it just somehow just, blech. I mean, I'll drink tea without sugar in it or something. It was good. But this is Wednesday. This is prayer meeting. And like I said before the break, I wanted to alert you to the fact that Lou Dobbs has found religion. Now you all know that for the most part, I wouldn't pee on Lou Dobbs if his guts were on fire, because he's anti-Bush now. But you know, he was part of the problem when it came to running against Bush running against Al Gore. He was part of the problem with John Kerry, and you know, couldn't be bothered to speak up. But now he's an advocacy journalist, if you watched 60 Minutes this past Sunday. And he's found religion, and he's really upset. You know, all this time we've been watching the religion industry just absolutely make a mockery of the Constitution since the moment George Bush entered office. You know, the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives and $1 million of your tax money going to do flyers and posters for the Snowflake Baby program. Woohoo, Snowflake Baby, because they're all white. And so you know, I mean, Dobson, Falwell, Robertson, we've seen the excesses. We've watched story after story of little children raped by ministers of God. Did Lou Dobbs notice that? Thanks for playing. Next question. But now Lou Dobbs has got his maiden forms all in a twist. This is an opinion piece of his from CNN. I'll just share a couple of paragraphs with you. This week, the head of the Los Angeles Archdiocese, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, basically threatened his faithful with denial of heaven if they don't support amnesty for illegal aliens. The good cardinal said, quote, "Anything that tears down one group of people or one person, anything that is a negative in our community, disqualifies us from being part of the eternal city," unquote. Now, Lou apparently doesn't get it enough to note that Mahoney nor the Benny the old anti-aircraft gunner who shot at Americans and Allied planes over Germany in World War II, none of those guys can deny heaven to anybody. This is assuming, of course, that heaven exists. Okay, we're assuming that for the sake of argument here. But that really, really, really just peed in Lou's Wheaties. The idea that a minister of Jesus Christ would stand up and demand that we not crap on poor people. That just you know, ruined his day. And all of a sudden, Lou had to run out there and write himself a column about how religion in America is attacking the separation of church and state. And it's dangerous, I tell you, dangerous. Of course, isn't the eternal city? What I thought that was Rome, city of God, wasn't? Was that Saint Augustine? I can't remember my great thinkers in superstition history. Saint Augustine. Remember Saint Augustine? He was the guy who wanted to go on buggering little boys until he felt like getting right with God, and he said, "Make me clean in your sight, O God, but not anytime soon." Anyway, Dobbs writes, the nation's religious leaders seem hell-bent, on ignoring the separation of church and state when it comes to the politically charged issue of illegal immigration. A new coalition called Christians for Comprehensive Immigration Reform Wednesday will begin lobbying lawmakers with a new advertising and direct mail campaign on behalf of amnesty for illegal aliens. You think just once Lou Dobbs could refer to these people as human beings instead of aliens? I'd settle for referring to them as working people instead of aliens. They didn't come down in some beeping spaceship, Dobbs, you horse's rear end. The Reverend Jim Wallace, now look at that, how about that? He's finally upset about that, and the first thing he can find is a liberal preacher to go after. Golly, Ned. The Reverend Jim Wallace of Sojourners Magazine put it this way, quote, if given the choice on this issue between Jesus and Lou Dobbs, I choose my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But see, this is where Lou went and found some little intern. Hey, find me a Bible verse. The Jim Wallace is being snotty with me, and he says he's going to choose Jesus over me. So he comes back with this. But before the faithful acquiesce in this false choice offered by the good reverend, perhaps he and his followers should consult Romans 13, where it is written, quote, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Of course, Lou Dobbs is too damn dumb where New Testament theology is concerned to know that that's a desperate attempt on the part of old Saul of Tarsus to keep the heel of the Roman boot from coming down on his young religious sect that he had carried out of Jerusalem and into the Greek-speaking world. How about that? They spoke Greek and not English. I wonder if Lou knows that, too. I wonder if Lou knows he's a barbarian. I wonder if Lou knows that the etymology of the word barbarian comes from the fact that the people who spoke Greek thought everybody else who didn't speak Greek back then were pretty much freaks. And that all they want to, because every other language to the Greeks sound like people just walking around going bar, 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 and so they became the barbars. And thus, barbarian comes down to us so that we can have it handy when we need to talk about Lou Dobbs. Because, you see, that Romans 13 verse is BS. And I don't mean Bible scripture. Lou Dobbs despises working people, especially brown working people. There are two kinds of people on this earth. There are people who work for a living and people who don't. To suggest that Lou Dobbs works for a living is probably a little bit bubble off plum. There is a more obvious and immediate judgment offered by the followers and members of both the Protestant and Catholic churches. A Zogby poll last year asked churchgoers if they supported the House bill that would make illegal aliens return home and reduce future illegal immigration by securing the border and performing checks on illegal employers. 75% of Protestants responded that was a good or very good idea. Well, that just tells you that the Protestant denominations are morally and ethically bankrupt and dead. And that's all there is to it. Because, you see, you can't take seriously the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, who had a lot more in common with Jesus and Jorge in the parking lot at Home Depot than he did with Lou Dobbs. You can't take him seriously and take Lou Dobbs and take Lou Dobbs at his advocacy at the same time. As the old saying goeth, a man may not serve two masters. And Lou Dobbs is out to crush the poor working people who come to this country to do... never mind. God, I despise Lou Dobbs. Hey, Lou, stay out of religion. Don't quit your day job, buddy. Maybe somebody can explain Romans 13 to you someday. It ain't gonna be me. You're not worth my time. Let's go talk to Peter real quick. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, and today was Bookmobile Day out here in the rural South, and so I went down there, and I had requested a book, and it was on the Bookmobile. It's the book called With God on Our Side, and it is the book by Michael Weinstein regarding what's going on in the military, regarding promoting Christianity and the idea that, well, you know, the militant Muslims are, you know, that we're involved in what's really a cosmic battle between Christians.
Yeah, this is particularly odious and nasty out in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy.
Yes, it is, and it focuses a lot on that, the book does. And what's happening, though, you know, we just have another problem here, because what's happening is these people are being, the chaplains are saying that they reserve the right to convert the unchurched. And I was even reading an article today on one of the news sites about a Jewish fellow. He's a veteran who's disabled, and every time he goes into a VA hospital, even though he clearly indicates on the admittance forms that he's a Jew and that he does not wish to see a Protestant minister, and he lists the name of his rabbi, et cetera, et cetera. They send ministers in there to pray with him and to try to convert him to Jesus and in general pressure him, and they refuse to serve him kosher food, which is required by his particular, you know, it's a fairly regimented, the group he's in anyway. And you know, Bob, you can get kosher food even in prison. I mean, you know, they accommodate, you know, foods that are you know,
yeah,
for a particular religion. I mean, so,
they'll do kosher. They'll do what? What's the other word? Halal.
There's several, and just plain vegetarian. Just because I don't eat meat, all of that is accommodated. So, it's just amazing to me. But what's so disturbing is, you know, the military at this point is, even if we get rid of the Bush administration, the military is thoroughly indoctrinated into this militant Christianity in the same sense that.
Remember General Jerry Boykin?
Well, I remember the name Boykin, but I can't place out where that fits.
This is the guy who went around churches wearing his uniform saying, I fought in Somalia and I knew we'd win because our God was bigger than their God and Allah is a demon.
Yes, and it goes back to some obscure verse in the Bible about the Prince of Persia interfered with Gabriel when Gabriel was trying to get to somebody who had prayed for help. The Prince of Persia rose up and they wrestled or something. You remember it? It's very obscure, but it goes,
all that Old Testament stuff's like reading gossip to me. I mean,
they'll whisper the Prince of Persia, so they think we're fighting the Prince of Persia, which is this demon that's supposed to be based in the Middle East, and literally we're God fighting the Prince, you know, the Prince of Persia. But if Bush ever declared martial law for some reason to stay in office or whatever, what we would have is an armed bunch of Christian fundamentalists.
And that, Peter, is part and parcel of something that I've mentioned from time to time, and that is that we are going to continue to reap the whirlwind of what George Bush has sown long after little children spit on the ground at the mention of his name.
Oh, we will.
He has destroyed the military in more ways than one.
We will.
And the fact of the matter is, if a court case goes up based on this stuff, you can count on the fact that, I mean, after all, remember Robert Byrd said of Samuel Alito, I think we can count on him to be a defender of religion.
There you go.
That was the yardstick by which Samuel Alito was deemed competent to sit on the highest bench in the country. So in a court that has Alito and Thomas and Scalia and Roberts and occasionally Anthony Kennedy, you can get away with anything in terms of shoving right-wing, phony, faked-up, dummied-up, Darbyite, ignorant the fundamentalism down the throats of the American people.
Yes, and especially now in the military, because as you know, the standards for getting in the military have been drastically reduced. You know, you don't have to have graduated high school. Your IQ score does not have to be on the high side of the bell curve. In other words, these people...
You don't have to come from the deep end of the gene pool.
Right. These people are easily influenced and indoctrinated, and the whole pack animal instinct comes easily. I've seen the way this whole... Christianity indoctrination. I was a Christian when I went into that faith-based drug rehab thing. So, you know, but it gave me a chance to step back and just look at it from, you know, the point of view of, you know, just of not being stupid, you know. And it works. I tell you what, it works. And it's not so much faith that they get. It's the attitude of superiority and being...
Submitting to authority.
Right, right.
Romans 13, hey, right. Nice work.
Right, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen in that particular situation, and I'm sure this happens in the military too, where they'll whip out that Bible verse about how God, if there's a government in place, it's God that put it there.
Yeah, Romans 13, yeah, that's exactly what I was just weirdo Lou Dobbs quoted it.
Yeah.
As a reason to hate illegal immigrants.
Well, we're in a hell of a lot of trouble if Bush pulls the national state of emergency. What is the word where they have ruled by the military?
Yeah, martial law.
Thank you. I just used the term a minute ago and forgot it. Bob, I am so old. No short-term memory. I can't find my car keys.
You hide your own Easter eggs.
I truly can. Oh, Lord. But, you know, we got a lot to worry about. And even if we get rid of this, we're going to be unraveling what he's done to the government for 50 years, trying to fix the FEMAs and all the Social Security things. He tried. And we've got the military. In the meantime, we've got the military in the background ready to kill us.
Onward, Christian soldiers.
Our military.
Yeah.
And we've got military contractors freaking hacking into our computers. You remember my Halliburton rant?
Sure.
Fort whatever it was, 1026, I think. And... We're screwed, dude. We are in a lot. We're in deep. Dude.
And that's why I bring up stories like like crazy ass Ted Poe, from Texas, you know, quoting the Imperial Wizard of the Klan on the floor of the House. That's how bad it's gotten.
No shame. No shame.
No. And not afraid to be called on it. Because no one's gonna. I'm not trying to run off down the garden path or anything. But just as a way of pointing out some of this stuff, I got a story here in front of me. Again, and it notes, on Tuesday, without note in the U.S. media, more than half of the members of Iraq's parliament. Now, bear in mind, we're sitting here saying, well, you know, they're not doing anything over there, and they're getting ready to go on vacation. They're going to water ski and have a high old time and drink frou-frou drinks with umbrellas in them. Well, they are doing something. Because on Tuesday, without note in the U.S. media, more than half of the members of Iraq's parliament, most of us would call that a majority, rejected the continuing occupation of their country. 144 lawmakers signed on to a legislative petition calling on the United States to set a timetable for withdrawal.
Yeah.
Did Katie Couric have that? I'm just curious.
No. Sure.
Brian Williams? Charlie Gibson?
Yeah, and I was reading something within the last couple of days about soldiers talking about how the Iraqi citizens say the same thing to them directly. Whenever they're not shooting them, you know, splattering their brains in the pavement, when they do get a chance to speak, they're saying, go home.
And see, there's another side to what you've brought up here, and that's a little survey that came out, a story from a couple of days ago. I don't even have it here in front of me, but it's just off the top of my head because it left such an impression. Part and parcel of this faith-based militarization, you know, so Falwell and Robertson and Dobson can have their own private military, which is basically what they're getting down to. Surveys were done of veterans who had returned from Iraq. Did you see this one, Peter?
I have read something along those lines. I may not have seen the same one.
We've sent a million soldiers,
yeah,
to Iraq at one point or another.
I didn't realize it.
Fully half of those say that they think it's okay to torture. Fully half of those say that it is okay to be disrespectful to the people that they're trying to bring democracy to.
Yeah.
Fully half of them say that it's okay to kill them.
Yes, yes. There was something today where there's a Marine general who's apologizing for a group of Marines just slaughtering people up and down the highway over some.
Now, do you think there's any interconnection?
Yeah, they're shooting the Prince of Persia, the people who are possessed by Islam or something.
I wish I had a Cupid doll. I'd give it to you because you just won it.
There's something going on in Florida too. There's a where is this place? It's at Palmdale or Palmetto, Florida. Something starts with P. It's in South Florida. There's a Muslim church down there, and they've outgrown their synagogue. What, I don't know what you call it.
Mosque.
Moss, thank you.
You're welcome.
And they've got a building permit to build a new place, and the problem is that butts up against a bunch of Christians, and the Christians are, boy, they are just in arms, and you know about how they're all training terrorists and this sort of thing. And there was a black minister going on and on about how, you know, how low life and evil they were, and white ministers. I mean, it crosses racial lines, this hatred. And then there's this calm, gentle Muslim, I don't know what you call him, pastor, leader?
Imam.
What?
Imam.
Imam, okay. Dude, you are so smart. I just wish I had your mind. Anyway.
No, you don't want to be there. It's okay, like good. Got dust and spiders and creepy dark places.
Okay. But the thing is that, you know, he was talking about how, you know, the militants didn't represent Muslims. They represented militants, and that they had, that church had assisted with the homeless people and food drives and all the things that Christian churches do, but boy, the Christians were having none of it. And this is being egged on by the freaking people in charge, from George Bush right on down.
Yeah, sure, sure. I saw a story in that weird little freak paper up in New York, The Sun.
Okay.
And there's a hissy going in Brooklyn because in like one room of, you know, P.S. what the heck ever, they're going to teach Arabic language classes, and they're going to teach Arabic.
Uh-oh.
They're bringing a madrasa to the public school system. I'm sorry. They're bringing a madrasa to the public school system.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's not a southern redneck, Bob. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But it sure seems that way sometimes.
You're damn right it does.
Man.
This is terrifying. If you remember that bumper sticker, you know, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not terrified, you're not paying attention.
Yeah. And of the church.
Yeah, these are there's Lou Dobbs having a hissy over, you know, a Catholic priest saying, as far as I can tell, what a Catholic priest ought to be saying. You know, that is, you know, Jesus was for the poor.
Oh,
Jesus
God,
was for the.
Got, there is a movie. It is marvelous. Lottie in the chat room recommended it to me, and I've just seen it. It's called The Saint of 9/11, and the title is an immediate turnoff to me because I'm just so up to here with everything 9/11 because of all the
right
cascading problems it's called. But Bob, this is a Catholic priest who got it. He was out there giving his coats to the poor, and there was a line in this movie. I'd strongly recommend it. It's called The Saint of 9/11. It's a documentary. Very very touching. But one of the things he said is, yes, I go to the Catholic Church. And all these people, we go to the same building, but apparently we go to different churches. It's, and he said he was okay with that. He got it that he was separate from them. And it's just an amazing movie. Anyway, there's an encouraging side of the coin, but yeah, a lot of it is.
It's encouraging to see Cardinal Mahoney in Los Angeles saying that Jesus loves everybody.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you take everything on face value, he does.
Yeah, and this hate stuff. This is new. This is in the last 50 or 60 years. God didn't used to be a hater, did he? I don't recall.
Well, you know, he's kind of a rotten little spoiled child in the Old Testament, and he grows up. It's interesting. He grows up as the Old Testament moves on, and then he's had a sea change, and he's a completely different God by the time you get into the New Testament.
Oh, isn't he though? Yeah, I sometimes wonder, is that because, you know, Jesus sort of like was there to sort it out, to say, look, you got it wrong. But nobody wants to pay any attention to that message.
No, they don't, because it's not convenient. Because if you take him seriously and the business about, you know, verily, verily, I say unto you, it shall be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, you take that seriously and society has to change, Peter.
Yeah. It will have to change, but it won't. And I don't see. You know, lately I've come to the conclusion that the best we can hope to do here is to try to stay with people of like mind, to keep our sanity, and to try to help people who are less fortunate than we are, and just get the hell out of this world as quickly as we can. And I'm not advocating suicide. I'm just saying to just try to get through it. It's like the whole thing is just a test of some sort to just show us how evil people are. I don't know what it is. I certainly can't explain the meaning of life, but I don't think there's much we can do, Bob. If we just speak the truth like we're doing.
Well, when you say there's not much we can do, Peter, that's not taking a defeatist tone. I know what you're saying. You say all we can do is speak the truth. That's all we can ever do.
Well, yeah, that ties into what you were saying about more conversation is the answer to shutting them up.
Yeah.
You were saying that earlier tonight.
That'll because if you believe that the truth will out, then you have to keep speaking truth. You know, that's what I've said a million times about this, about what a little miracle, a miracle built made of nothing but hard work this network is. And that is all I got to do is open up the microphone and tell the truth. That's all I got to do.
Yeah, and
I wouldn't take Limbaugh's or Hannity's or O'Reilly's or any of those freaks' jobs for all the money in the world.
Yeah.
Because it is hard work to get on the air and lie your butt off every blessed day. And it'll do things to you. It'll turn you into a sexual harasser. It'll turn you into a drug addict.
Apparently so.
If you sit there and you wallow in evil long enough, evil is going to get on you, evil's going to seep through your skin, and it's going to eat into your brain and go all the way down to the very DNA of your being, and the next thing you know, you're sending your maid out to buy you 300 Oxycontins because you're eating them 60 a day.
You know, self-medication is the only piece you're going to get if that's what you're doing to yourself.
Right. With Limbaugh, he didn't have a back injury. Dude was out playing golf, okay?
Yeah.
What it is he swims in filth. And as a consequence of that, he had to find some way of easing the tribulations to which he was subjecting his soul on a daily, hourly basis.
I agree. And I don't think he has a problem with erectile dysfunction either. I think the problem is he's just taking so much Oxycontin it doesn't work.
Well, that and remember, please, it was an all boys weekend trip
Yes, there's no other reason. That's what the Dominican Republic is known for.
It was an all boys trip to a place where child prostitution is a gimme.
Yeah, it's a given. It is. And I was reading about the Dominican Republic today. You know, the AIDS crisis down there is terrible. And they can't get medications, and they have, you know, the drug runners who run like cocaine and stuff up here on reverse trips, they smuggle antivirals to the Dominican Republic and they go on the black market. It's a pitiful situation down there, and he's down there, you know, paying children chump change to basically ruin their lives for his kicks, and with no conscience about what's going on around him. Damn these people.
Yeah. Damn them. Of course, they're damning themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, we just have to do it one day at a time, Bob. You're doing a hell of a job, I got to tell you. There's going to be an extra star in your crowd in little heaven.
Oh, I don't know. I still get the emails about how I'm damned and everything. So.
I know, and that's a shame. You know, that's a shame.
No, I got told, we're going to shut down your prayer meeting.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful yep. stuff. And, well, you know, and I mean, that's, now bear in mind, that's a story that that the whore of Babylon next to me over here told me when I got back from getting my stretch test.
She's the Prince of Darkness now, you know.
Princess.
Yeah, she has moved on. She has moved on in the astral plane to the Princess of Darkness and the Abomination. I mean, the woman.
She is. She is.
You got to hand it to her.
Oh, I know. She is Regina Noctis. She is the Queen of the Night.
She could probably get you an interview with Satan.
No, what did Bill Hicks the other night say in that clip I played the other day? Oh, no, let me be adopted by the Satanists down the street, the ones with the good albums.
Yeah, right. That was hysterical. I love that. Yeah,
Peter.
Yes.
That's okay. If I'm Jezebel, then that means I get to ride the beast at the end. So I think we're just going to charge admission.
Well,
you know,
on video.
On the planet she comes from, Peter, they ride fundamentalists like ponies.
That wasn't right.
I meant to tell you, I got Earth Girls Are Easy today.
Oh,
very
yay!
Cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't plugged it in, but it's not. See, you're.
Oh, it's a marvelous. And I want to be a veterinarian because I love children.
I just watch it for Jeff Goldblum.
Okay, well I'm going to plug it in and check that out later.
Sounds good. Peter, you take care.
You guys take care, too. See you later.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, how do you follow that? How do you follow that? I'm telling you. I'm telling you. You just... I'm going to talk that man into doing a radio show yet, or I'm going to bust in the process. Okay. Let's see. It's about... 22 minutes before the hour. Agnes says it's time for a break, and when Agnes says it's time for a break, you know what? It's time for a break. Wouldn't want to get cursed or nothing. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Staying alive though the city is dead. Hiding their shame behind a hollow laughter while you are crying alone. On your bed, pity Cassandra, let no one believe you. But then again, you were lost from the start. Now we must suffer and tell our secrets, bargain, playing smart again in our hearts.
Sorry, Cassandra.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is a message from NoMoreVictims.org.
In the spirit of Mother's Day and its origin, you can help a child this year by donating to No More Victims as a gift to your mother this Mother's Day. No More Victims brings war-injured Iraqi children to the United States to receive the medical treatment they need. You will help bring Sally, who lost both of her legs in the war in Iraq.
My mother used to say all the time, I look after people's kids because one day I know somebody will look after my kids. I feed people's kids because I know somebody one day will feed my kids. That informs a lot of who I am as a mother. That I know that I'm not only parenting Mavis and Duncan, but I'm responsible for every child that comes through.
Honor your mother. Go to NoMoreVictims.org. Give today.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Before the hour, I'm Bob, and we go right back to the phones. Our good buddy Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I tell you what, I got to finally see that commercial tonight, the thing with General Batiste.
Oh, yeah?
That looks real nice. And like I say, they say the one next week is General Eaton, and the one after that's going to be Wes Clark. Where essentially it's like George Bush says he listens to the commanders, and it's like, no, he doesn't.
Well, I saw a quote the other day where maybe I shouldn't even mention it. It said the fear of the Bush administration is that Congress will start listening to the generals.
Well, the thing that's really good about this one is, like with Batiste, he comes in there and says, "I resigned." You know, it's like you're not getting too many people in the press saying it, but it's like, yeah, and that's the only way he can speak out is he had to resign.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to resign before you can say, you know, president's full of,
because otherwise they'll take your pension from you. Yeah. And there's an up and a downside to it though, Luke, because these guys resign, and that means that there's nothing left but the egg suckers and the social climbers behind them.
But like I say, now you got this thing, you know, what does it say now? The Iraqis, you know, it may be a poll, but they were saying, you know, like 60% of them want us out now. And I'd say that's probably low.
It is, but, you know, more than half of the Iraqi parliament said... No, it wasn't a poll, Luke.
Oh, it's a vote?
It's a daggum resolution. They signed on to it. Said, get out.
I remember hearing it, but I didn't hear the exact context of it, so I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, now, isn't that interesting? I could have sworn that was what they said. You know, when they want us to leave, we'll go. You know, I could have remembered somewhere somebody saying that.
And now U.S. officials inside the green zone are being told to wear their flak vests when they go outside, you know, out of doors. You know, I'm not sure what Arabic for DNBN foo is, but I think we're about to find out.
Is this the 21st century version of fragging?
Yeah, or the 21st century version of the Alamo. I mean, we're kind of contained in one little spot in Baghdad, aren't we?
Well, I saw the thing tonight. They were talking that apparently somebody decided to go up and set off like 1,700 pounds of explosives in a Kurdish town.
That did happen.
It was a Brill or something along like that.
Yeah, one of those peaceful places.
Yeah, I mean, where it's been nice and quiet. And then that's not even counting the Turks wanting to come over and beat on the PKK. It's like say, gee, George, the part where it was quiet now it's starting to get kind of loud. Isn't this fun? Like, God, you know, the place where you actually had friends, you know, the northern part where they always said, well, this is where some of the worst of it is, where bin Laden and his people are coming from. It's like, George, the northern part's the part that Saddam didn't have any control over. That's where your friends, the Kurds, you know, the Northern Alliance, you know, that's the people you're talking about. Those are the people you say we have to trust.
It's all gonna just go. It's all going straight to hell. I mean, and I'm sorry. Well, we knew this.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the amazing thing. Like I said, I think we talked about this one. The amazing thing the thing that strikes me, I should say, more than anything else, is sitting here and watching these jackasses on like MSNBC rewrite history. Oh, I was against this. You know, I was always against this. It's like, wait a minute, where were you in 2001, 2002? Let's see, you were the ones going, oh, he's such a great man. Now all of a sudden, oh, I was always against this.
And they get away with it. That's what's so disgusting, Luke. They get away with it.
Well, it's that, and I saw tonight that, Mr. Beck is still on his attacking Al Gore on the global warming,
getting away with it.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I said, it's amazing, isn't it, the media critic for CNN, amazingly enough, the one person he will not criticize, of course, is Glenn Beck.
Well, it's in the contract.
Yeah,
but you know, tell me this: mm-hmm. What does Glenn Beck get out of it?
I have no clue.
That's it's always a matter of cherche. You know, the French used to say cherche la femme. I say cherche l'argent. Find the money. What does Glenn Beck get out of this?
You got to think. And I'm just wondering if CNN's trying to make headline news into Fox Light.
Well, you know, you add Bingo Billy Bennett and the Nancy Grace into the mix, and
that's my favorite name for Billy Bennett, the bookie of virtues.
That is good. I just have this mental image, and I know it's really going to burn your eyeballs. I just have this mental image of him because, you know, we know that he sat naked in his hotel room playing the one-armed bandit.
No, please don't put that one there, please.
You know, with the little white boxer shorts with the hearts on them, you know, sitting there eating Cheetos and feeding the bandit.
Well, the way I always think of him is I think he should have the garters, you know, up on the sleeves and be wearing the little... visor.
Yeah, the little green visor.
Yeah, look like
with the white boxers and the hearts on them.
But you know what I mean? Look like the old fifties poker dealers.
Yeah.
You know, that to me that's what I that's what the image I think of when I think of
virtuous guy, that Bingo Billy.
Yeah. Well, did you enjoy the article I sent you about Mr. Fred Thompson and his red pickup truck?
No, the rented red pickup truck.
It's like. We remember years ago that it was there's a dealership down in Chattanooga. Basically, enough how all the Republican skullduggery in Tennessee starts in Chattanooga.
Yeah, that makes me think there's something really, really evil in the water there.
But that's where.
What are you guys sending downstream from Knoxville? Hmm? What are you guys sending downstream from Knoxville?
Well, let's see. I think they've shut down the reactor, so I don't think it's anything radioactive. You know, it's one of those things we try not to think about it. It's one of those things with him. It's like, amazingly enough, and you could not, you know, when he ran for the Senate here, you could not get anybody to mention the fact that, oh, by the way, at that time, he'd been a big lobbyist for about 7 or 8 years. But you couldn't get him to mention that. Of course, they wanted to show the pictures of good old Fred wearing his cowboy boots, his blue jeans, and his... And
Lamar Alexander's flannel shirt.
Well, a flannel one, but not quite Lamar's, but you know what I mean. Yeah, look, he had the good old boy look down.
I saw a reference to him with his referring to Fred Thompson's fake country kicker look.
Oh, well, like I say, Fred's a good actor. He can turn it on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, never mind the fact that he was an inside the Beltway D.C. lobbyist for 21 years.
You know, the fact that, like I say, he was a lawyer. I mean, you got to remember, that's where you first saw him was during the Watergate. You know, he was one of the lawyers for the Watergate panel. And, you know, I mean, that's where you first saw him. If you go to the Tennessean in the last couple of days, they ran a real nice biography of him. It's more about his childhood, you know what I mean, but showed where he was essentially the kid in town that the other parents would say, don't go see you play with that Fred Thompson.
Was he born? Have they worked up the born in a log cabin right next to Davy Crockett kind of thing yet? Because you know he's from Lawrenceburg.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Not yet, but I'm sure by the time they get done rewriting it about six times, that I'm sure
Freddie
in a cabin that was made out of Abe Lincoln split logs. You know how it is.
Yeah, I fully expected it. That or, you know, he's a lifelong member of the Lawrence County, Tennessee Mennonite community.
Oh, I tell you what, it's just one of those things, sit there and watch them rewrite history every chance you can.
Well, I was sitting there waiting for my test today and picked up a fairly recent copy of Time and saw William Crystal opining that the presidential campaign will be Barack Obama versus Ronald... It'll be Barack versus Fred Thompson, and that will be the race we never got to see, namely Ronald Reagan versus Bobby Kennedy.
Like I say, just watch them. Every time you turn around, that's what you're going to have. The Republic, the right wingers are going to be out there. Every time they mention Fred Thompson, half the time they'll probably say, Ronald, oh, no, I meant Fred Thompson.
Well, you know, screaming in doctor's office is generally frowned upon, but I wanted to fling that Time magazine across. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, speaking of the doctor's office, did you see that fun little story that's been running on the sports channels about the thing up in Milwaukee?
No.
The thing where they had the group last night that gave away 100 tickets to the first 50 people who subjected themselves to, you ready for it?
I'm waiting.
A prostate exam.
No.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, I guess it serves a purpose. Good for them. Maybe it was 100 people who couldn't afford a prostate exam otherwise.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just one of those things when you hear, like I say, it's one of those things you're sitting there going, was this put out by the Onion? Come on, tell me it was. It had to be, or is this Daily Show? Come on.
Yeah, it's one of those where you go running over to Snopes and you know, you see it all in green. It true. Oh.
Oh God, but I still say that we're just dang lucky that the stupid guy didn't have his Frank Drebin moment. I'm just glad he didn't set the Queen on fire.
Although, if you read Wayne Madsen reports, it was a real nightmare anyway.
Oh, it was. You know what I mean? That's what I was figured. I figured he was going to pick up the shish kebab or something and stab somebody. You know, it's one
hey, Queenie, things. Goose, yeah.
Like I, well, I mean, I, he, I figured he... it was going to be pigs in a blanket. You were just going to see him take the mustard bottle. And, you know, nice yellow line right down the road. Oh, I just sent you the thing not too long ago. You saw the thing about... Nancy Grace.
No, I haven't.
Well, she's leaving her court TV show.
To do.
Well, apparently, I guess headline. It didn't say anything else, but they said, you know, that she's leaving, and they just didn't renew Miss Cryer's contract. Apparently. So you got to wonder what's going on over at Beautiful Court TV.
Huh.
So.
Well, that's one less place that. Hateful woman will be able to scream.
Yeah, but the only problem is, guess what? Guess who'll be up there trying to get a job? Guess who'll be trying to get a job? Probably.
Oh no, not Bullwinkle's baby sister.
Would you think that's where she'll run?
In a heartbeat.
But,
in a heartbeat.
Well, you know, I saw the thing earlier today. They were talking about it, and I just flicked across channels, and I'm sorry I did, but I passed across the haircut that died, and Mr. Beck.
Yeah.
And he's on this thing talking about this hedge fund that John Edwards was running, and it's like, let's see now. Like I say, you can't.
No, wait. Okay. So we got him talking about global warming. We got him talking about the hedge fund. Isn't it interesting, at least a little bit, Luke, what they're not talking about?
Well, you know, it's like we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. What an amazing how, if you looked on probably headline news, and I'm sure if you looked over on Fox Noise, that amazingly enough, for about a week, you couldn't, you know, that everybody else in the news was talking about somebody named, what was her name, Jessica Lynch and some other fella, you know what I mean?
Pat Tillman, yeah.
But amazingly enough, if you looked at either one of those channels, you couldn't find it mentioned. But amazingly enough, you know what I mean, it was sort of like everybody else was talking about this, you know, sort of like, you know, this is beyond belief, you know what I mean? Just when you hear that story, you just wish somebody was out there just say, what were you people thinking in the Army? You know, did you think you were going to send her to Gitmo so she'd never get her story out?
Right.
I mean, was that the plan or something? Because, you know, I mean, it's fine. You got away with it for a couple of months, and then, by golly, she was actually well enough to talk. You know, it's just some of this stuff, you see them do this stuff, and you're just kind of going, Oh, the other thing I saw tonight that blew my mind. I know he's got a book out of this thing with Christopher Hitchens. I'm sitting there going, he's got some book now on religion. I'm sitting here wanting to listen to this alcoholic tell me about religion?
Well, and he debated Al Sharpton the other night.
Oh, God.
And something was said about Mitt Romney, and now Mitt Romney has his sacred underwear in a twist. Because Al said, don't worry about us. Us Christians will defeat Mitt Romney. And what Sharpton was saying is, as opposed to an atheist like you, Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
And so, no, of course, the right wing's got to take this opportunity to turn, Al Sharpton's a racist. He's a religious bigot. Look, most of fundamentalist Christianity believes that Mormonism is a really weird, bizarre, heretical cult.
I mean, that's what... You know, we were talking about this the other day, and I was...
For God's sakes, they think Indians are Jewish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I got on with the local right-winger here the other day, and me and him got in the argument about Pat Robertson and Falwell. And I said, right now, you know, they for the past 20 years, have been trying to get more and more political power. And I said, be happy, because I said, whenever they get to a point, if they ever were, you know, if Pat Robertson was ever to get any real power, you'd understand what the word theocracy means. And so if you ever think that what some of the things they talk about now is, wait till if Pat Robertson ever gets elected someplace.
Yeah.
Laws would be rewritten that, like say, would make the boys over in Iraq real proud, the Sharia.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, let's get...
Well, that's why I constantly say, Luke, that if Pat Robertson ever sits down and has a conversation with Ali Khamenei, he's going to find, or some Wahhabi freak for that matter, he's going to find out that they've got a lot more in common than they do, than they don't. You don't like gambling? I don't like gambling. You don't like booze? I don't like booze.
Well, I mean, it's like every once in a while, when as we say, the evil uncle chuckles, you know, when he shoots his mouth off on his 700 club, or 7-Eleven club, whatever it is. But, you know, when he shoots his mouth off every once in a while, that's the true him, you know, when he makes these statements about, you know, storms being because God was angry.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's the true Pat Robertson. The one where he goes on these things and tries to sound halfway reasonable, that's the fake Pat Robertson. You know what I mean? That's not the real Pat Robertson, so to speak.
Precisely.
I mean, if he ever got elected, you know, someplace, thank God he won't. But you know what I mean? If he ever got elected someplace, I hate to imagine what he would try to ram through. You know what I mean? We were talking about the thing, you know, last week with Dana Rohrabacher. That's his kind of Republican. You know, the thing where Rohrabacher made the statement to the people, said, you know, I hope it's your family.
I hope you suffer the consequences. I wish we had some way to get that into the media, because that man needs to be shamed into an apology. He needs to be run out of the house.
What they did to Dick Durbin.
Right.
Dick Durbin just mentioned the fact that we were using, in Abu Ghraib, we were doing things that would have made the Nazis proud. You know, and we were. We did. Our army did. But, you know, it's amazingly...
And they transformed that into Dick Durbin said the army is Nazis.
Yeah. And like I say, isn't it amazing, though, how you can't get anybody to mention this fact here about Rohrabacher? And, you know, like I say, you can probably go to C-SPAN and download the sound clips.
Right.
I just saw
the time. Yeah, let's hit the news. Luke, thanks so much, man.
Have a good evening.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, it is news time. I get caught up in these wonderful conversations, and it just, you know, but yeah, it's time for the news. We'll be back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Listen, Jesus, I don't like what I see. All I ask is that you listen to me. And remember, I've been your right-hand man all along. You have set them all on fire. They think they found a new Messiah. And they'll hurt you when they find they're wrong. I remember when this whole thing began. No talk of God, then we...
This is the Quality News Network. A suicide truck bomb killed 14 at the Iraqi Interior Ministry. 87 people were wounded, including government officials. The explosion is being blamed on Al-Qaeda insurgents. Vice President Dick Cheney made an unannounced stop in Iraq as part of his trip to the Middle East this week. He said the country remains a dangerous place. While he was at the U.S. Embassy in the heavily fortified Green Zone, a mortar round exploded. No casualties have been reported, and Cheney's visit was not disrupted. Defense Secretary Robert Gates told the Senate panel today that if there is progress in Iraq this fall, the U.S. could begin a troop withdrawal. American military commanders are expected to reevaluate the security situation in Iraq in September. The White House is threatening to veto the newest Iraq war funding bill. House Democratic leaders are proposing to fund the war through the summer, followed by a reevaluation to see if progress is being made in Iraq. In the UK this morning, Scotland Yard arrested 4 more suspects tied to the 2005 train and bus bombings, which killed 52 people. British Prime Minister Tony Blair will make an announcement about his future tomorrow. He'll specify a date when he plans to leave office. Blair has been Prime Minister for 10 years. President Bush visited the southwest Kansas region hit by a hard tornado last weekend. At least 11 people were killed by the storm, which virtually flattened Greensburg, the farming town of 1,600 people. In Nigeria, 4 American oil workers were abducted by rebels today from a construction barge in the Niger Delta. Yesterday, militants blew up 3 major oil pipelines. Pope Benedict arrived in Brazil for his first trip to Latin America since he became pontiff in 2005. He will spend 5 days in Brazil, where he is expected to speak about poverty and crime. The district attorney in Riverside County, California, will seek the death penalty for the man accused of setting a massive wildfire that killed 5 U.S. Forest Service firefighters last fall. More than 200 firefighters are working to contain a wildfire that is burning in Los Angeles. At least 300 residents were evacuated last night. However, some were allowed to return to their homes today. More than 800 acres have been burned. Arson investigators are searching for the point of origin of the blaze, which has been contained 50%. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news, coming up next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Archaeologists in Greece report a rare find, a piece of fabric that has survived intact for 2,700 years. The brittle yellow material was found inside a copper burial urn. The oxides from the decomposing copper killed off destructive microbes, allowing the woven cloth to survive. 3 weeks before the start of hurricane season, the first named Atlantic storm of 2007, Andrea, has formed off the southeastern U.S. coast. Chinese authorities say they're tightening up controls on their food industry in the wake of the U.S. pet poisonings caused by food imported from their country. Manufacturers added a sometimes toxic illegal chemical to pet food to raise protein levels in what has been a common practice in China. The New York Times reports pharmaceutical giants Amgen and Johnson & Johnson are paying U.S. physicians millions of dollars to prescribe their anemia medications. Other doctors are warning the drugs may substantially increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. The Federal Reserve has decided to keep short-term interest rates unchanged at 5.25%. Light sweet crude oil is trading at 66.5. Taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow Jones Industrials had another record high close today, closing the trading day up 54 points at 13,362. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Reed Kavner.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
6 minutes past, and we continue conversation radio for a Wednesday evening prayer meeting edition of Head On, and we go straight to the phones. Malin is calling from New Jersey. Hey, Malin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. I had been sort of hesitant to call you because I thought I had a terrible New Jersey accent. But
no, there's no such thing.
It doesn't sound that bad?
No, there's no such thing as a bad Jersey accent. I love the Jersey accent.
Well, I live about 50 miles west of New York, so I grew up on a farm, apple farm, so I sort of far from the city. But my feelings, I know this is changing the subject, but if there were to be an impeachment, and the impeachment led further than just the impeachment, and it became involved in the UN and so on, and it did go eventually to, this might be years from now, but to go to the Hague, and for war crimes, you know, like some of the people in other wars have had to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Would the people in the Middle East have a different feeling towards us if they knew that those people responsible for all this damage, not the American people, because I don't want them to hate. We all know that the American people are not, as a rule, anti-Muslim. It's just that we have gotten that impression through the media. I think what your feelings were on if there were something to come to that, whether we would have less problems, less terrorism in the future if something like that were to happen.
I'm of the opinion, Malin, that justice is always a good thing. And it's interesting you would raise this issue, because I remember back before we started beating the drums of war for Iraq, and as we were beating the drums of war for Afghanistan, we demanded of the Taliban that they turn over Osama bin Laden. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they said, well, we're not going to give him to you, but we will certainly turn him over to The Hague, to an international tribunal. And we said, nope, not good enough. and started the slaughter in Afghanistan. So, I think that there's some indication. Small countries, I believe, Malin, actually have an idea that justice gets done in The Hague. After all, it was the Bush administration who had such a hissy, and the Republican Senate and refused to sign off on any idea of the United States government participating in the International War Crimes Tribunal or making itself subject to it. So I hate to say it, but I don't think there's much. I can't think of two people.
It won't happen, in other words.
I don't think so. But I can't think of two people more deserving to stand in the dock, the same dock that was stood in by Slobodan Milosevic. I can't think of two people more deserving to stand there.
And there's many more deaths on the conscience of they don't have a conscience, but on what Bush and Cheney have done than what Saddam Hussein. He killed during his reign of his country, because I think it would be minuscule.
If it isn't there yet, it is certainly approaching it. An interesting article I ran across today suggests, and I don't know why it's taken this long to get out into the information stream, but you know, when Saddam was running Iraq, you know, yes, he was a brutal dictator. Yes, he gassed his own people. Well, you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We don't know. The CIA won't even confirm that. But the fact of the matter is, you could be a Christian in Iraq under Saddam Hussein. In fact, his second in command or something, or ambassador Tariq Aziz, remember him? That man was a Christian. And the Iraqi Christian community is close to extinction at this point, according to a report from the Telegraph in the UK. Thousands have fled Baghdad, and some of the oldest Christian communities in the world have been shattered as a result of George Bush's war on the people of Iraq. And you can't help but wonder how that plays with the Robertson Falwell Dobson crowd. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and plus it doesn't do much for their people to keep the country in any kind of an economic stability, because they don't know how to maintain a country, the ones that are left. I mean,
and that's being referred to as the Iraqi brain drain.
Right.
The doctors, the
professors, the, you know,
the engineers, the scientists. I met a lovely lady over in Raleigh County, over in Beckley at one point, whose family had to flee Iraq, and they had run a chemical factory, and she was doing a catering business. They had been wealthy people, and she was doing a catering business, making the falafel and baklava and such things for little special occasions, and running a little grocery store, just trying to stay alive in the United States.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done.
Also, I wanted to let you know that I had relatives that were involved in the Iran-Contra.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle just got out this year. He was 14 years in prison.
Oh, wow.
And, his best friend was Alexander Haig, so I don't know where. I shouldn't be saying this, but it'll probably get back to me somehow through the family. But you know, there's a lot of people that are still in high places that are still doing things that should be charged with things.
Yes.
And they're still thought very highly of. I don't know if Alexander Haig is still living, but that's. He used to be out at the house all the time when we used to go out there to visit.
Oh, my.
My sister's, my father's married, my father married my one grandmother's sister, so, his daughter, rather. So, she
okay.
was in Helen.
Well, you know, I think that state dinner they had for the Queen of England the other night, I just sat in slack-jawed amazement, Malin, when I looked at the guest list, and I realized that one of the guests of honor, in addition to Her Majesty the Queen, was Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger.
Well, you know, he's not allowed in Belgium.
Oh, there's a lot of places Henry can't go anymore, because he would wind up in The Hague.
Well, I just find it very unusual that he's still alive. But I mean, you think he'd be worried to death at this point, but I guess he knows the shame. Sometime I would like to talk to you more about the Iran-Contra, because I know so much more about it.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
And I know a lot of the details with Bobby Inman and all that sort mm-hmm. of thing.
Oh, there's a name I haven't heard in a
Bobby
while.
Bobby Inman, do you know the name?
Yes.
Yes. He was his best friend in the Navy. In fact, I have shirts with his name signed when I was 2 or 3 years old. So,
oh my goodness.
Anyway, I'll let you get on with your evening, and I'll call in soon again.
I hope you will. I've enjoyed chatting with you. Anytime, Malin.
Okay. You take care now, Bob.
Will do. You too. Bye bye. 15 past, and we roll on. Gerard is with us. Hey, Gerard, calling from Indiana.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm good. A little warm here today, but that's fine.
Got a little like that here, too.
Oh, you're breaking up, Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you on a cell or something? Or?
Yeah, I'm on a cell.
Oh, okay. I'm terribly sorry. Is it getting any better?
Yeah, now it's good.
Okay.
I just wanted to kind of tack on with what you were talking to Peter about. And concerning the religious theocracy, I was in the chat room earlier. TSM posted a link to truthout.org where there was an article about Blackwater. And I didn't know this till just a few months ago. I saw a report on Democracy Now. They had interviewed Jeremy Scahill or Scahill. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I'm not sure how to pronounce it either.
And about his book on Blackwater, and I was shocked to find out that this was started by a man by Eric Prince, who he comes from a family in Holland, Michigan. I used to live in that area. And, in fact, I worked for the company for a time that his father started. They were a first-tier supplier to the auto industry. And I just had a factory job, but his father was kind of a, you know, self-made man, started a little tool and die business, and then in the 60s he expanded and got into becoming a supplier for the auto industry, and just the business grew and grew and grew. And this Eric Prince, his son, is of course the heir to this. I don't know how much he is actually involved in that business anymore, but his sister is married to Dick DeVos Jr. of Amway fame.
Oh, wow.
And
some great laundry detergent there.
Well, it's just, you know, you can talk about prayer meeting night. Now, this guy, his father, and I know these people because they were part and members of the same Protestant denomination that I grew up in. They are all Calvinist Reformed people, and there's even, you know, different sects within that whole spectrum. But I was just astounded that here is this son of this man who is, by all accounts, universally looked up to and you know, thought of as a self-made man and a pillar in his community, you know, went to church every Sunday.
Right.
And here his son is, you know, basically running a clearinghouse for mercenaries. And I just...
I don't know, but isn't... But... It's not too far from one to the other, is it?
Well, no, I guess not. But it's just looking at this article that TSM provided the link for. The more I find out about this, the more shocking it gets. I mean, this article says that they're, it wasn't until recently. We've been in Iraq since 2003. It wasn't until 2005 or 6 that they decided to actually do a head count. 2006, a head count of how many quote-unquote service providers there are, which the American taxpayers are, by the way, paying for, because these are contracted to the U.S. government. There are the count, and now I realize this is not all military people involved in military operations, but there's 100,000 people there.
And about 50,000 of them are armed mercenaries.
Yeah.
And they are answerable to no government, no general, no... They're answerable to no one.
Yeah. And the last count that I had heard of total actual U.S. military personnel in both Afghanistan and Iraq was only about, I say only, but was 150,000.
Right.
So there's nearly as many service contractors there as there are actual military people.
Gerard, you raise a very interesting question there, and it's one that I frankly haven't pondered, but we may as well now. Could it be that the reason that the Bush administration is being so pig-headed and foolish and stubborn and short-sighted about pulling our troops out is that they realize that if they pull the troops out, then somehow or another they have to get Halliburton out and Halliburton's mercenaries?
Well, I don't see how they could not.
I mean, I honestly haven't thought about it in those terms, but that's sort of an eye-opening little thing to ponder, because they can't order Halliburton out. They can't order the mercenaries out. The mercenaries answer only to the person who signs the paycheck. So if the money gets cut off, you know, all this talk about how the troops will have to go on the half rations and they won't have any bullets and blah, 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 has nothing to do with the troops, because anybody who bothers to take a good hard look, Gerard, understands that the money is in the pipeline for everything that the troops need. The question is the money in the pipeline for what Halliburton and Blackwater want?
Right. And, you know, this going back and forth about funding the troops and finding out how this money is spent. I mean, I hope that the Democrats will continue, and I hope the subpoenas will continue to come down, because you talk about, I mean, not that Bush would listen anyway. I mean, he's got 70% people in the United States are against the war, and he's still there, but it would seem to me, politically, it would have a lot of traction for people to, you know, you were talking with Luke about things that aren't reported. I mean, how, if this was really reported in detail of the activities of Blackwater and what's being done, and that they are contracted by our government, it would seem like even in Congress, even the most wet noodle Democratic congressperson would be able to see that it would be easy for them. They would not have to worry about so-called political blowback on an issue like that.
You would think. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. In other words, there's that phrase again. It's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You know, God, it's almost hard to put it into words, Gerard, what we don't know about this war. You know, we are beaten over the heads day in and out. Well, we want to support the troops. Well, you know what? There's almost as many mercenaries as there are troops. What are we? You know, what's the real cost of supporting the mercenaries? We're paying those guys $100,000 a year, for the love of God. We can't find out exactly what's going on. You know, it used to. The Napoleon said an army travels on its stomach, Gerard. And any, you know, you watch any old World War II movie or you watch an episode of MASH, there's invariably there's a scene of you know, going through the chow line and then the army food. Yeah, well, you know, tastes like crap, but you can live on it. Yeah, you know, moaning about army. But you know, those were sergeants and privates and corporals manning those kitchens. Well, you know what? They don't do that anymore because it was deemed inefficient. And of course, these goons in the Republican Party said, "Well, the private sector can provide food more safely and economically." And so what happens is that. You know, we think about the Blackwater mercenaries running up and down the road blowing people away. The other part of those so-called contractors, though, Gerard, are little Indian and Asian and Filipino dudes who have been hoodwinked into coming over there and can't leave.
Right. Well, here's a quote from Jeremy Scahill. I'm going to just say Scahill. From his book, it says, "It's a total subversion of the concept of the nation-state. Blackwater has recruited Chilean soldiers for its operations in Iraq. Although 90% or 92% of Chileans were against the war in Iraq, and the country, while it was on the UN Security Council, opposed the United States in 2003. Instead of building a coalition, as was done for the first Gulf War, they are paying soldiers from a country to fight in a conflict that their own government has condemned."
Does it also mention the old apartheid knee breakers, skull breakers that are part of the Blackwater mercenaries?
Yeah, it talks about South Africa.
Salvadoran death squad members are members of the Blackwater mercenary outfit. It seems that every rotten element where we can find the former members of right wing death organizations they've gravitated to Blackwater.
Mm-hmm.
And we're paying for them with our tax dollars. And that just turns my stomach.
And you know, and to me, because I don't want to say I run with these circles of people, but like I said before, I understand their mindset because that's the mindset I was brought up in. These are people who went to church every Sunday, and they've
never got a blessed thing out of it, Gerard. You know what I mean?
Well, I can't speak for Eric's spiritual. You know, state or any religious state, but it just blows my mind that anybody that calls themselves a Christian could look on this situation if they knew about it and look upon it approvingly and saying, yes, as a Christian, I can support that.
And I think that the short answer is, and you know, you're very... you're very circumspect, and that tells me that your faith means something to you, that you're not willing to say these people aren't getting anything out of it, but I don't have to worry about that, and I can. They aren't getting anything out of it. It tells me a lot about the state of the church. I remember the so-called land letter that was signed by five different leaders of fundamentalist sects giving George carte blanche to go to war in Iraq. That tells me that they've got not a clue about what Yeshua was talking about, because there's nothing in there to support it. And Lou Dobbs out here tonight quoting Romans 13 just makes me want to stick my finger down my throat, because it renders it to a level, if it hadn't been rendered almost meaningless before, they are certainly succeeding in rendering it meaningless now. Because you can't spend Sunday after Sunday after Sunday supposedly worshiping a man who was tortured to death, who never owned much of anything, who was poor as Job's turkey and brokered in the Ten Commandments, and got tortured to death on a cross in the most vile means of execution the empire had available to it at the time, and say, you know, he was an establishment kind of guy.
Yeah.
Oops, sorry. I'll get out of the pulpit now.
Well, you know, it's all about the establishment and the maintenance of the hierarchy, you know, and I've thought for a long time, I mean, you don't have to scratch the activities of the Bush family too far to understand that it's basically a mafia-style setup. It's based on loyalty.
Silence.
Violence. When they don't need you anymore, your history...
Yeah, somebody go ask Manuel Noriega about that.
Yeah, yeah. And somewhere along the line, this group was able to, you know, snare in and bring into the fold the religious right. And, it, you know, things happen that you just don't understand. I can remember, like, the day after, no more than 2 days after the 2000 election, riding in my car, listening to NPR, and there was just a small little blurb about former President George H.W. Bush was taking a trip to England, I believe London, to have a meeting with the G7 economic leaders, which I don't know who those people are specifically, but it just struck me as odd, and I meant to go back and research it more, but it just, and that's the reason that I remember it, because it just struck me as odd that a president who had been out of office for 8 years would sit down and have a meeting with the G7 European leaders.
Yeah, a little
unless it was at the behest of the then sitting president.
Right. Now, you mentioned, you know, how the religion industry got wrapped into Republican politics. If you really want an overview, and it's a very, I hate to even use the word anymore, balanced thing, it's actually almost overtly friendly to them. The book that came out a few weeks ago called The Jesus Machine. Get your hands on that, Gerard. It lays it out bit by bit and piece by piece, and starts way back in the 60s. With the beginning of the desire to co-opt the Republican Party, because the religion industry knew they could never get their mitts into the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
But go and read that, and I think it'll speak to you. Gerard, I got to roll along. Good to hear from you. Thanks for the many great points to ponder.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon, Bob.
All right, later.
All right.
Bye now. And calling from Texas, Terry. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Bob. I have a good friend, Mr. Rick Goodner, down here in Texas.
I consider him a good friend, too.
And Rick is a, as we say down here, a hoot. He is.
I can tell it at a distance, Terry.
Yeah, I didn't really get to catch. I've been out kind of working in the garage and didn't get a real good chance to catch everything that your previous caller was speaking of. But one thing that I did kind of catch on there was our ultra-conservative Christian that want to call Jesus a conservative Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Our dear friend Rick has said this many times, that Christ, in fact, wasn't a Caucasian Christian conservative. He was actually a dark-skinned liberal Jew. Been called many names for telling people that.
Not surprising. Listen, please don't tell white bread Lily White Cracker Church America that Jesus was anything but blonde-haired, blue-eyed Scandinavian. They just come all kinds of unglued when you do that.
They don't really understand that. But anyway, the one thing that has really kind of bothered me lately is with our oil companies now, and the obvious monopoly that our current administration is refusing to do anything about, when we start developing like the hydrogen fuels and the ethanol, what's going to keep our oil companies from dominating those?
Well, they're already doing it, Terry.
And
I was just reading a story over at Truthout earlier this evening. Because of the fad of biofuels, namely ethanol, you are going to begin to see, we're already beginning to see food shortages as biomass that would otherwise go into food production is being shifted into ethanol production. There was a dramatic spike in, and I know this, I think it was Flemball having a hissy, just giggling. Oh, he was giggling his fool drug-addicted head off about it a few months back. I said, my friends, they're rioting in the streets of Mexico because the price of tortillas has gone up from a dime to 11 cents.
Well, to those people, that is probably quite a jump.
That's a 10% jump in the price.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, dumb old Flimball can't be bought. And, you know, the idea that anybody would need, that it would matter to anybody, that food would be 11 cents and they couldn't just eat all of it they wanted, you know, that's just funny to him. But the reason it's going up is because a lot of corn production is going into ethanol production. And if you're one of those, if you go deeply into the green issues, you find out that the energy expended to turn corn into gasoline or into alcohol, for all intents and purposes, is incredibly intensive, and it's not a good carbon bargain.
Yeah. Well, and our most abundant fuel source in the world, of course, is hydrogen. How are they going to corner the market on that?
Exactly.
They will figure a way to do it.
Well, what you do is you rig the legislation on the front end.
Yeah.
I mean, I frequently praise my congressman for some of the tough stances that he takes here, that he takes in the Congress, but every now and then he just goes out and does something that just makes me a little bit crazy, and he's all on board this coal liquefaction bandwagon. And I can't believe the number of people that are. We're going to take the single dirtiest form of carbon energy and turn it into gasoline. And he's worked really hard to get the Air Force on board for this.
Well, the Air Force is going to do what the administration tells them to.
And of course, what it means is that we're gonna blow the living snot out of more of the oldest mountain range on this sweet little blue green time machine hurtling through the universe, namely the Appalachians.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, and
so we can. So I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over.
No, that's fine.
No, so that we can fuel jets that will then fly over mud huts in Iraq and drop bombs on peasants. Or maybe drop bombs on Iranian peasants. You never know.
I have a distant family member who was in Iraq. He was in the Marine Corps in Iraq and said he would love to go back in a humanitarian role. He doesn't want to go back in combat, and that's exactly what he said. He said, we have people here in this country that are poor, but they don't know what poor is when you go in, and just like you said, living in a mud hut. And these people are brought up to hate the Shiites and the Baathist parties and the other factions of Islamic belief. These people are brought up to hate, and they know what we can say. We hate somebody, but it's not comparable to what goes on in Iraq. And we all know, now most of them don't want to believe it, but we all know this war was basically in Iraq was nothing more than oil. And that's all it's ever been. That's all it ever will be.
Right.
As long as we have this administration we have here now. My father was first Marines on Peleliu in World War II.
Wow.
I have two uncles that are, my dad's brother retired from the Air Force. My mom's brother was in the Army. And the backing of the troops, I back the troops. I don't back the reason we're over there. But they are doing a difficult job. I think.
I'll take it a step further, Terry. They're doing an impossible job.
Mm-hmm. And what I don't understand is what our administration has done in Iraq. We have gone in and we have taken a form of government that had been there for what thousands of years before we came in, and forced a completely new form of government on them.
Well, from the days of Sumer and Ur and Eridu forward, a strong man has always ruled there. And now that I don't want to I don't want to sound in any wise elitist. I'm not saying that these people are incapable of democracy. They're not incapable of it. But it has to be something, Terry, that they want for themselves.
Well, and that's I mean, our country is just a little over 200 years old. 231 years old now.
Yeah, and our ideas of democracy and representative government are pretty much down the toilet already.
Yeah. But can you imagine what the citizens of this country would do if so damn insane had sent troops over here to try to
force his form of government on us.
Well, that's the sad thing, Terry. I have a sneaking suspicion that the Republicans would have been out there waving Iraqi flags before they got here.
Well, most likely, yeah.
Because you know, these are the people you can't trust in a fight.
Well, I just really wish that the American people would wake up and see what's actually going on. I mean, I emailed you earlier, probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, saying something about conservatives and liberals, how it's actually the liberal life forms that have progressed, that have carried on the life.
Mm-hmm.
The conservatives, those that refuse to change, have died out.
And it's going to continue to be the case. The great frenzy on the right-wing websites over the election of that president in France, Sarkozy, for instance. Yep. Well, he's a conservative, just like George Bush. No, he's not. The man is committed to global climate change initiatives. He is to the, I mean, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is to be a right-winger in France is to be a little bit to the left of Ted Kennedy here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, he's going to assault their work week, and he wants to bust the unions, and that's just dirty and sleazy, and the French people won't tolerate it. Well, they're not going to let their culture get messed with. Say what you will about the French. I love the French.
I just hope we don't have another George Bush anywhere around in our country or the world.
Well, you know what? We do. This whole thing, the 2008 presidential election, is a dog and pony show, Terry. I'm telling you now,
because this whole thing
is designed to create a Democratic incumbent in 2012 against whom the family can run Jeb Bush. Mark my words.
And the problem with our two leading candidates, Barack and Hillary, is I think we have too many people that are still locked in the white male dominant government that we have now. They're not going to elect a woman, and they're not going to elect a black man.
Well, consider what's going on. You know, you've got CBS out there turning off all comments on all stories having to do with Barack Obama because it's been nothing but a filthy, steady tide of racist invective and hateful bigotry. Yeah, that's not coming from the Democratic Party, and no matter how often Flush says it, it's not coming from Clinton Inc. either.
No, it's
coming from the little clavern that is the GOP.
The Daddy Bush, of course, ex-CIA director. I mean, this guy has more assets at his disposal than he can even think of.
I'm scared. Frankly, I'm scared to death, Terry, that they are gonna make Barack Obama dead.
I hope not.
I hope not too. Because I think he is a valid part of the debate. He needs to be brought around and taught some things, but he is a valid part of the debate.
Well, we've come a long way since the days of slavery. We still have a long way to go. Now, of course, I hope there's nobody still alive today that had a first generation relative that was involved in slavery. They're a lot older than anybody I've ever met.
Yeah.
But it's one that both sides of the issue need to get over and get past. I'm not saying forget it. Remember it. Yes, it's part of your history. But we need to move on. And I think
as white folk, Terry, I don't think we are in a position to tell people who have slavery and in their background, I don't think we're in a position to tell them how to get over it or when.
No, yeah, well, exactly. We can't tell them. Look, just
I mean, for God's sakes, a big part of my heritage is Scots, and when you get right down to it, I guess I have little psychotic breaks with myself because another part of my heritage is English.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate half of myself. I'm kidding, but you know, I can read Scots history and see what the English did to them, and feel a sense of resentment out of that.
Well,
and that was 700 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's just our president, Dick Cheney is actually who's the president.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. I think the two things, one thing that really bothered me is both when
Dick Cheney and George Bush want to call themselves Texans. I was born and raised in the state of Texas, and here we have almost a sick love for our state, especially if you're a native Texan. And for George to swag around and do his best John Wayne imitation, swearing him down that he's a Texan, that really bothers some of us. I mean, it really
does. I take it your people have been there for a little while.
Well, yes, I've got how far back now we've gone, but I was born and raised in Amarillo, Texas, and have now moved to Central Texas.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's parents were born in this state. My mom's parents were born in this state. So, yeah, we go back a ways. And not saying that Texas is better or worse than any other state, but we...
Oh, I know. That's okay. I know how you guys are.
Native Texans just have almost sick love for the state, and to see two people defile the reputation we have like these two have just really puts a...
Oh, but you've got so many... No offense, Terry. You've got so many more problems. We started the program out tonight with Congressman Ted Poe.
Yes.
Of Beaumont.
Mm-hmm.
Who yesterday on the floor of the House in support of the Iraq War quoted the first Grand Imperial Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, we have lots of issues.
Yeah, you've got moments, okay? But I also understand the other side of it, because I know people who are proud to drive around the great state of Florida with that tag on their front bumper says Florida native.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't just get here. I believe in regional pride in this country. I believe it's good for us. Our friend Malin, who called a little bit ago, said he was afraid his Jersey accent was too bad. You know what? I love accents. I love dialects. I love regional cooking. I love everything that makes this a melting pot. You know, I'm in West Virginia. I can't get a good tamale.
We're good here.
I know you do. That's my point. You know, I'm in West Virginia. I can't get decent barbecue. I gotta go to Alabama for what I recognize as barbecue.
The pork.
Or, you know, Mississippi or Georgia or, you know, yeah. Or maybe even Texas if I beef.
Yeah. And that's the big... We have some pork here, but most of it is beef.
Oh, no. Rick has already taken me to task on the barbecue, trust me.
Yeah, he has a tendency to do things such as that. But
there's, you know... I live for stuff that comes out of the Republican delegation out of Texas, because if it's going to be crazy, I mean, if it's going to be real crazy, and it's going to come out of a Republican's mouth, I hate to tell you, Terry, but 9 times out of 10, I can guess the state.
Well, and with our governor now, I mean, forcing young girls as young as in sixth grade, 12-year-old girls, to take this HPV.
Yeah, but that got beat, didn't it?
I believe it has, but it was it was almost like King.
Well, I know there were a lot of people who gave him hell because they said he was getting a huge profit from the drug industry.
Well,
for doing it, you know, big kickback.
Yeah, I believe it was Merck Medco that had really been lobbying hard.
But it was the fundies who came out and screamed that it was going to cause their darling virgin daughters to go out and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
That just made me crazy.
Well. In my opinion, too, that's where they're thinking that thought was already in their head in the first place.
Right, because, you know, we vaccinate, we don't refuse to vaccinate our children against typhoid because we think that if we do, they'll go and start drinking water out of mud puddles.
Well, exactly.
So, you know, that was a tough one for me. And I understand there are people out there that questioned the efficacy of the vaccine. There were people out there who questioned the safety of the vaccine. And I want all of that. I want all of that seen to before we start giving it to our children. But if I've got a chance 40 years down the road to keep one of my daughters from having to walk in the house and look at their husband and their children and say, Mama's not going to be here in 6 months. I'm going to be inclined to do that.
Well, and I think a lot of from what I heard, the people I've spoken with and I've talked to here, what they heard, it was more a safety issue, just that they haven't tested them. They don't know what the effects will be 40 years down the road.
Well, I know Mike Papantonio came out hardcore against it, and that kind of surprised me. Hey, Terry, I've got to roll on, but sure is good talking to you.
Thank you.
I hope I'll hear from you again soon.
I'll do my best.
All right, you take care now.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll give the last word to our good buddy David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. The thing that I have tonight to share is an op-ed commentary. I think I have enough time. We'll see.
Okay.
It's called One Day You're Gonna Wake Up, America. One day you're gonna wake up and go to your lousy job with its lousy salary and non-existent benefits. You might even remember the good job you once had, or that the government you once supported gave tax breaks to companies like the ones that exported that good job of yours to the third world, which is what they're now starting to call your country, or that the same government undermined the labor unions which fought to get you your good wages and benefits. One day you're going to wake up and be furious at the monstrous tax burden you are carrying, a tab which accounts for 50 of the 70 hours you must work each week to just to squeak by. You might even try to figure out why your tax bill is so high. You might remember that the government you once supported shifted the tax burden from the rich onto people like you and from the taxpayer of the time onto those of today, and that they borrowed money in astonishing quantities to find their sleight of hand so that you won't work, so that you work 30 hours a week just to pay the interest on a mountain of money borrowed decades ago. One day you're going to wake up in anger at the absurdly poor education your children are receiving. You're going to remember that it wasn't always that way, that even after the military's voracious appetite was temporarily sated, your country still managed to find a few bucks to at least educate a workforce. No more. And you're going to remember how you applauded when your educational system was twisted in to a test-taking industry that is careful, above all, not to teach children how to think. One day you're going to wake up literally sick and tired. You're going to want treatment for your maladies, but you won't be able to touch the cost. You're going to wonder what you were thinking when you believed your country had the best health care system in the world, even though it was the only advanced democracy in the world that didn't provide universal health care, even though it devoted 50% more of its economy than those of other countries to pay for a system that left 50 million people uninsured, and even though there were massive layers of unnecessary and harmful private sector bureaucracy skimming hundreds of billions of dollars of profits out of the system in the name of free enterprise. One day you're going to wake up too tired to go to work anymore. You're going to want to retire in dignity, but will be left instead to laugh bitterly at the cruelty of that joke. And you're going to wonder what in the world you've been thinking, voting for a president whose primary goal was to allow Wall Street to raise Social Security, destroying what had once been considered the most successful domestic program in human history. One day you're going to wake up and wish that it wasn't so bloody hot, and there weren't so many diseases and species eradications and violent storms lashing the planet. And maybe you'll even remember that once you supported a government that lied about the very existence of global warming back when it might have been curtailed, a government that scuttled the barest remedy for the problem in order to protect oil company profits. One day you're going to wake up and wish you had a government that could simply and competently do the basic things that it was designed for, a government that could protect you from foreign attack, that could come to your rescue after a devastating hurricane, that could properly manage a news program or other people's security, an administration that didn't pervert the purpose of every agency within the government to its opposite, using civil rights lawyers to fight civil rights, for example, or the EPA to protect polluters. One day you're going to wake up and cry out for simple justice, blindly applied without bias, and perhaps you'll remember when that principle died, when your country stood by and watched the politicization of its judicial system for purposes of partisanship and said nothing. When it stood by and watched its highest law enforcement officials in the land lie about their failing memory of events and pretended to believe that was acceptable. One day you're going to wake up, and then you wish you weren't being drafted to go fight wars you don't believe in. You'll remember how soldiers were sent to their death for lies. You'll remember how badly they were treated when they came home, maimed and twisted. You'll remember how real patriotic former soldiers were mocked and humiliated by dress-up unpatriotic former non-soldiers. And suddenly, you'll understand why no one would volunteer for the military anymore and why people like you had to be drafted. One day you're going to wake up and want very badly to run outside and scream in anger about a government that long ago stopped serving your interests in favor of the narrow interests of a tiny oligarchy. But instead, you'll stay inside and keep your scream tucked safely in your belly because you'll know that in your country's dissent has long since been outlawed on pain of torture and death. You'll remember concepts like due process, limitations on government search, seizure and wiretapping, habeas corpus, trial by peers, legal representation and prohibitions against cruel and unusual punishment as historical artifacts no longer even taught in schools. One day you're going to wake up and want so badly to change governments. You're going to treasure the concept of democracy like no Soviet dissident ever did. You're going to crave the opportunity to own your own government, to make your own societal choices, to make a change of direction never before so desperately necessary. And you're going to wonder why you didn't speak up as you watched firsthand the dismantling of the democracy you had been handed by previous generations of patriots. You're going to wish you had been patriotic enough yourself to demand above all else free and fair elections, and you're going to shake your head in puzzlement at how you stood by, watching in silence those that patiently were not. One day you're going to wake up and want to get the hell out of your rotting, repressive country. You're going to remember a time when that wasn't true, but oddly enough, you'll find that other countries remember too. They'll remember your country's arrogance, its unilateralism, its walls, its racism, and its politicized abuse of immigrants. And they'll remember how your government undermined and violently replaced theirs whenever corporations from your country had their profits threatened. You're going to want to leave, but there will be nowhere you'll be welcome. You're going to find out those walls can face both directions. One day you're going to wake up in a hostile world where your country no longer has any friends. There will be governments of other countries, former long-standing allies that cannot afford to have anything to do with you, lest their publics angrily remove them from office for collaborating with a country as hated as yours. Nor will those governments trust yours anyway. They'll perhaps possess intelligence that could save your life, but they will not share it. They will possess forces that could help you survive real security threats, but they will not provide them. Your country will have become an international pariah, the South Africa of the 21st century. And because no one will assist you, one day you're going to wake up fearing for your life as your country is brutally attacked by angry militants deploying weapons of mass destructions against your cities. Long dormant connections in your brain will resurface, and you will dimly understand why. On this day, perhaps March 20th, 2023, you might be assisted in your comprehension by the message of one of the attackers, someone whose family your country callously destroyed in its mission to accomplish in Iraq, and who spent the next 20 years plotting this day's revenge. And you will wonder again why you stood by as your country attacked Iraq on a completely bogus pretext. You'll remember applauding when this mailed fist was long ago sent. And just as it comes hurling back in your direction at a lethal velocity stamped return to sender, you'll wonder what you were thinking. And you'll realize just how much you weren't. One day you're going to wake up, America, and you're going to find out what was happening while you were sprawled on the couch watching endless mind-numbing loops of CSI Desperate Housewives or Dancing with the Stars. One day you're going to wake up and realize that catching all the action during week 7 of the 2011 NFL season really wasn't so critical in the greater scheme of things after all. One day you're going to wake up and wish you'd invest a little more energy into monitoring and choosing the people who have made monumental decisions on your behalf. One day, with a flash of remorse greater than you thought it possibly that one human vessel could contain, you'll remember the ignored warning shots across your bow. Moments later, you'll discover the human capacity for searing remorse is actually even greater still as you contemplate your inattention, even to the shots that were fired right before the bow, with a fury you could yesterday have thought yourself incapable of. You'll hurriedly attempt to fix band-aids to the tattered splinters remaining from your country's once sturdy hull, but you'll learn quickly the toll of those years spent wasted in a civic coma. You'll find that no amount of patchwork can any longer save this sinking ship from its appointment with a dustbin of history. In shame, you'll regret the callous arrogance with which you laughingly dismissed those who sounded the early clarion call, "We are destroying ourselves." They tried to tell you, but even on the rare occasion when you rouse yourself from your stupor long enough to learn the slightest bit about the very threats that jeopardize your life and that of your species, still you found it more reassuring to follow the blustering worst among us with their patently absurd pretended confidence and their ever constant resort to the cheapest of false solutions and the rudest of demeanors. One day, you'll desperately search for hope of any sort, but none will remain. Nothing will be left to save you. One day, you'll realize that once there were solutions, but now that day is now long past. You'll see that human technological capacity ran its evolutionary race with wisdom, and the latter came in second. You'll sadly realize that you stood by while the country led the once great tool making species to its own destruction. One day, you're going to wake up, America, and realize how far it's all gone. But if that day isn't very soon, it won't matter, because one day you're going to wake up, and it will be far, far too late.
Wow. Where did that come from, David?
That came from Information Clearinghouse, David Michael Green. I'll send it to you so you can put it on the front page of your blog. I know you got to run.
Yeah, do please. Got to roll. Thanks, man.
All right. Later, Bob.
Later. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining me here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. We'll be back tomorrow,
6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific. You know how it works. Agnes did a lovely job of producing this evening, and I've got to commend myself. They ran my little butt off on that treadmill today, and I'm glowing in the dark, and I still got here. Yay me. Brian Reznor announces and does a wonderful job. John Fox is our engineer out of Sydney, Australia. Peter Godbold's our IT consultant. The hardest working man in liberal talk is Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what happens here at the Horn, you value him. And the way you show that you value him is by helping him end his latest fund drive. Please. Many thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. And with their support, we're trying to save the American dream. Liza, go to bed. And always, always, RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
That the American public is not aware of. And he reveals the Democratic funding bill includes privatization of Iraq oil and a carte blanche, open-door policy to invade Iran. In a meeting with the West Coast, West Los Angeles Democratic Club on Saturday, May 5th, presidential candidate and Ohio Congress representative Dennis Kucinich revealed that the Democrats in Congress had made some secret concessions to the Republicans in the initial bill to continue funding the Iraq war that was vetoed, and in a subsequent version that is currently being negotiated. They include the following. Pay attention, folks. This is big. Dennis says, privatization of Iraq's oil in the original bill, but not shared with the public. A rule was created that said this clause could not be removed during debate on House floor. Also, Bush could invade Iran without approval of Congress. A clause that would require him to get approval from Congress first was removed. Public is not aware of this. The timetable for troop withdrawal from Iraq to be removed from the bill in the post-veto version. Now, the clause that Iraq must private ownership of its own oil was in the original bill presented by Congress, although it was not mentioned publicly. It was stated as a benchmark to be met by Iraq, and if it was not met, the U.S. would withdraw troops and refuse to offer peacekeeping troops to help rebuild the country. That means the Iraqis would not own their own oil, but instead international oil companies, primarily U.S. oil companies, would instead divide the ownership of the oil. Now, this seems to reaffirm the worst.